This is the MLW Radio Network.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Striga. As always, joined by Dylan, and this is the fourth time I'm doing this introduction right now because I fucked it up three times before. But we're fired up, Dylan, aren't we?
Oh my goodness. One of my favorite episodes already. We're at it again. This feels like the old days, to be honest. We would often record in the middle of the night for me, you in the morning. Here we have a much more normal schedule for us. Me at noon, you in the afternoon, probably closer to the
very evening. Normal people right now.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's exactly what I would use to describe me. It's very normal. But I'm so excited about this show, and there's just so much going on about wrestling. I can't blame you for fumbling it a little bit earlier on. But like a seasoned vet, you got back into it. You know, you didn't let a blown spot drag you down. We got back into the meat of things. I mean, you know, stuff going on all over the world right now in wrestling. In Europe, you just went to a WXW show recently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, America, heavy rumors of people becoming All Elite. Even as we speak, we're like doing this Friday before Rampage. Mm-hmm. So if the man once called CP Monk does debut for AEW, then shout out to the fans out there for that. And then, of course, there's our bread and butter, which is Japanese pro wrestling, which is my favorite of all of them, and Mexican wrestling too. But their CMLL is in such disarray, it would take about 5 hours to even understand what they're thinking right now. But so we're going to focus on the Japanese side and a little bit of the American side too, just considering recent events going on. And I'm super fired up for it and cannot wait to get things going.
Like, I haven't been following CMLL for quite some time now. Basically, since COVID started, I've not followed Lucha a lot. I've seen some AAA shows last summer. Of course, I've also seen Triple Mania. And I've seen the debut of the Nueva Generación Dinamitas on that show. And I was really dumbfounded when I read on Twitter that they left CMLL. And much like Lucha Block, he was saying that those guys would really be CMLL lifers, but one way or another that didn't happen, and now they made a big impact on AAA, and that is just something that I don't know that anyone would have expected this to happen. But as you said, Alan, Japanese pro wrestling, always a topic that sparks a lot of interest and always a topic where things tend to happen very fast, and yeah, there's a lot of topics that we can dive into right now.
Absolutely, and the funniest part of all that was when Silverado Jr. got on Twitter and just basically buried Ultimo Guerrero.
Oh, that was great.
He was ruining CMLL, which, you know, like I said, if you read between the lines in some of my prior shows over the years, you could see that I may have a similar opinion as an outsider, but that's something that you probably wouldn't see happen in Japanese wrestling that much, that somebody would just go on Twitter and bury somebody, especially not in, like, the biggest company, you know, in New Japan or NOAH. That would be a really tough sell. So lots of differences going on. Like I said, lots of stuff going on all over the world in wrestling. So it's just a crazy time, but a really exciting one to be a fan. Like you said, Japanese wrestling has a lot of interest, lots of topics. And as you also said, things happen fast a lot of times too, because we have a lot of different things we can go with. And I'm confident, as we ran through our pre-show, we had a very rare slight pre-show topic listing. It wasn't really a meeting. It was like a minute or so, which is shows vintage Eastern Lariat right now. We're not going with pre-planned stuff. We don't have a lot of things to talk about beforehand. We're just shooting from the hip right now. We're going for what we think, what's in our hearts about this Japanese wrestling game. So I say let's get to it.
Absolutely. So for this episode today, we got three big topics. The first one is New Japan, both in the US and in Japan, but for the most part in the US for this episode. Then we're going to talk about some recent NOAH shows, some recent matches that we saw, and of course the updated lineup for the N1 victory and our projections for the finals, as well as a new category. I call it Rapid Fire Tournament Corner, because there are three tournaments that we are going to talk briefly about, with the Princess Cup, the All Japan Odo Tournament, and the 5-Star Grand Prix. So let us just dive into New Japan Pro Wrestling, Dylan. New Japan of USA, they resurged. They are back. They're back in front of fans in the US, and they presented a show this past weekend that right now, as we're talking, has a rating of 7.34 on Cage Match. Show at the Torch in Los Angeles. And I thought this was such a unique venue for pro wrestling, and just such a cool vibe that this this Torch had for pro wrestling. And what I specifically remember at the end of the show was when Tanahashi made his way back to the backstage area with the US title over his shoulder, and they filmed him from beneath, and he had this US title on his shoulder, and there was the Olympic sign above him and the torch above him. That was just a great visual.
Absolutely. I thought the show was really interesting in a lot of ways, not just the decision, obviously, at the end, but you know, when you look at the venue, great setup, especially for New Japan. When you have a direct comparison between this and the really lame Cork and Hall setup that they've ran to death, mm-hmm. it's just to say it all kinds of blends together. You know, if you just look at it, just visually. So to see them in a different outfit like this, I thought was a great fresh coat of paint for a lot of the roster. I mean, yeah, to be honest, you mentioned US, yes, but really the back half of the show was mainly focused around the Japan contingent. They put a lot of the strong guys in the early matches and saved the big matches for the end. So there was probably five or six matches that were pretty much based around a New Japan contingent, at the New Japan proper contingent, mm-hmm. of course. And you got to see them in this new venue. The fans were super energetic, super fired up. You know, a lot of these people here were so ready to see wrestling. They haven't seen a lot of these guys in literally years. So the fans totally delivered on that. And just from in general, it was a totally fresh coat of paint to compare this show to the kind of sterilized Japanese product that they have right now.
Absolutely. And there's been some discussions on Twitter this week, especially after the show. I think a lot of people were just hyped after the show went down. I saw it 2 days after it happened, so I wasn't as hyped as people watching live probably were, but there was some discussion on Twitter. Is New Japan in the US hotter than it is in Japan, Dylan?
Oh, no, that's ridiculous. Like, Japan is like way, way, way bigger than the US contingent. I mean, maybe in terms of like energy and like pure hype, maybe. But in terms of numbers, it's like Japan is like so far ahead.
Yeah.
It's not even comparable, really. But I mean, like you said, maybe in terms of like crowd heat, yes, I would definitely say that, because of the restrictions going on in Japan. And like I said, it seems like there's a lot of energy among the fans. But I do think in general that this show could lead you to a lot of conclusions to where they are taking a step forward in a lot of ways. Mm. So, you know, we can talk about the show in general and our thoughts on that.
And it also, this was one show. And if you look at Strong overall, they just had one full year of tapings in an empty arena, and calling this brand, this American brand, hotter right now based off this one show is a little bit much, I'd say. But yes, the show was actually very hot. And I gotta say, I really, really liked those first three matches that we had here on this card. This first one was in six-man tag, Barrett Brown, Mysterioso, and Bateman over Jordan Clearwater, DKC, and Kevin Knight. I think that those guys in the LA Dojo, the new LA Dojo they have now, where Katsuyori Shibata is training, they bring a lot of what you would ask for a Young Lions system, like the DKC and Kevin Knight. There is also Alex Coughlin, Carl Fredericks is on the roster. We see Clark Connors rising. Rena Rita was here. I really, really like the mindset that these American guys go in with. And it, as I said, it's very comparable, in my opinion, to what the proper Young Lions system in Japan is.
Yeah, that's always a highlight to see the young guys come through. And then you see someone like Mysterioso, who's a veteran. So they have a good mix of people. Like you said, Shibata's influence is pretty high. DKC, I thought, would probably be on the show. I've watched a little bit of Strong. You kind of made a good point earlier. I didn't even really go there. But like you were saying, like the show's been around for a year. And it's really just not that been that important of a show overall to a lot of the fans. I feel like it really hasn't grabbed a lot of people yet. But I've watched a few of their shows, and they have some good talent on there. Yes. And someone like DKC, Kevin Knight, Clearwater, they've all impressed in their own ways. So I think that they have a good crop of people there that they can kind of lace these undercards with on these bigger shows, and you could do good things with.
One of the main takeaways that I saw from the undercard was, of course, that Alex Coughlin impressed a lot of people. And as you said, probably this Strong show, it was on New Japan World, but I don't think that many people checked the show out before. But Coughlin has been pretty impressive on these Strong shows too, and the match that he had with Carl Fredericks on this show was very good too. And I think he's now coming around and he's getting some more bookings in the US too. That is very good for him, because the guy, he really worked hard throughout this Strong show, and him getting some attention is very nice. And they also had this story going on Strong that Clark Connors picked up a win over Rocky Romero, and he once again picked up one here with a finish that I don't know, I didn't quite get the finish, because it came after TJP's Mamba Splash and then Connors pinned Romero, which was kind of a weak finish if you're going to push Connors, because he could have just like hit his finish and pin Romero flat out. But maybe they just wanted to protect Rocky a bit here.
Push that Mamba Splash, I think, was really the main goal there. But Coughlin, fun fact, we were talking about Cutie Suzuki no Ringside Angel, a very old Joshi pro wrestling video game for like Sega Mega Drive. And I think that's a great reference, because Coughlin did use the Cutie Special in this match as one of his big finishers. So I was very impressed by that. And I on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat, I was doing the review of this the next day, and I was very impressed by him using that finisher in general. Much better than Carl Fredericks' finisher, which is just like a DDT, pretty
much. It's basically what Prince Devitt used to do in a different version.
Yeah, it's like the education, almost like a lifting DDT. Like, it's not even as cool as like Devitt's version. It was like a lifting DDT there. But big fan of Coughlin right now. I think he's doing some great work. They have a lot of upside there. Fredericks, interesting. I thought it was interesting, because when you look at where they were at the start of all of this, he was kind of pushed as one of the main guys of this show. Like, okay, he's no young lion no more. He's breaking out. Everyone said he's got superstar potential. And it's just because of the nature of Strong right now. I think it's been a really kind of a lackluster show in terms of its outreach. It's like on this show, he's in the opening match with Alex Coughlin. He's a guy that I would have thought you would have had a little bit more for. But it was a crowded show. They had a lot of matches on there. So good opener. I was impressed with Coughlin. The other match, pushing Connors. I like Connors a lot. I really like Ren Narita there. Oh, yeah. And he's another guy, like I was saying on the other show, if I were booking this, I would have had Narita in a much bigger match. He would have been the open weight challenger, I think. It would have been good to have somebody from the Strong show itself actually get kind of a push, because pretty much everybody was on these undercard matches, which is fair in some ways, but I would have tried to give them a little bit of a spotlight. And Narita is the best worker, in my opinion, but that's just me. I thought it was a good match. I thought all the matches were good, really, on the undercard. They weren't super spectacular, but one thing I liked about all of these matches, even so, like, there were two matches I thought were really lackluster and I didn't enjoy very much. There was one that I thought was really strong, but no matter what, every match on this show, you know, because you could look at, like, there'll be random Noah shows, random All Japan shows, New Japan even, where every match will be fine. like a 6 out of 10 3-star type of match. Like, okay, that's pretty cool and all, but they're all kind of just matches to have matches, and those shows are really, really uninteresting to me. So you see a show like this where a lot of the matches were 6 out of 10 level, you know, like pretty much if I were to grade them, but they all had a unique story to them. They all had purpose, and that made the show very easy to watch, in my opinion, rather than a show just of mismatch matches. And I think that they did a good job of getting over the storylines in pretty much every single match on the show, which whoever booked this, I have to give them props because they did a good job making the show work in every facet.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, as you said, Ren Narita was on this one. He had a confrontation with Fred Russell, one of his opponents, after that. And, of course, a shout-out to good brother Utes here. He was on this show as well in this match, on a losing team, though, with Russell and Romero. And Narita and Russell did get into a confrontation, and they did the singles match on the tapings the day, or 2 days thereafter, actually. And Narita beat Fred Russell in that match. So that's what we're getting on the next set of shows. They taped 9 matches, and I'm guessing that they're going to replay some stuff from Resurgence as well. So that would be 4 weeks of quote-unquote TV for NJPW Strong, and then they're returning again to tapings in Philadelphia on the weekend of October 16 and 17. And also, on this card, then there was another 10-man tag match, and of note there was that Yuya Uemura was in this match, and they faced Team Filthy, and this match, in the end, was won.
Uemura got the pin.
Yeah, you... I'm just looking at Purilov, and the match is missing on Purilov, actually, as I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, Uemura got the pin, and afterwards... Big story there. Shibata came out, and much like he did with other guys on this roster, like with, for example, with the DKC, he just looked at him and said, "Come with me." Great stuff there.
Yes, yeah, so very, very entertaining and a good start. Uemura definitely got the lucky straw. We were talking about this on the last episode about Uemura and Tsuji. He definitely got the big win here, being in LA.
Yeah. Just only being in LA is a big win because, you know, Tsuji apparently is going to the UK.
I mean, poor Tsuji on that one.
Jesus.
Yeah, feel bad for him, but Uemura, at least, I'm sure he's breathing a big sigh of relief right now. Gets to mess with Shibata, play, you know, learn a lot of new tricks, lots of new things that he can put in his ring style, and wrestle against some really good talent, too. So, big win for Uemura. He did, in fact, come with Shibata, so he is now officially part of the dojo.
Yes, he is. So, yeah, the show then went on, and there was this singles match between Juice Robinson and Hikuleo, and I'm looking at this tapings that they did, and they actually did the match again. And I have no idea why they did, because this was not good at all.
No, it sucked. And the funny thing is, the ending was so stupid, because he pinned him right away, and then he immediately got attacked. By Hikuleo, they did the flash pin for Juice, and then Hikuleo just immediately attacked him.
And the roll up was pretty bad.
Oh, that was a really bad finish, too, on top of it. I was seeing a lot of people saying, oh, Hikuleo's got tons of potential and all of this. And I was thinking, man, what am I missing with him here? I don't quite see it yet. He's big. I will give you that. He's extremely tall. He's got lots of hair, I prove. The look is good, but even how he wrestles, he doesn't really wrestle like a badass type of deal, like a crusher, you know, Bruiser Brody, you know, superpower badass type of guy. He kind of wrestles, I don't want to say gentle, but not the intimidating way you would need to be at his size to, I think, really get his gimmick over. Juice, I'm pretty much over in general, but I can't really put it much. I had very low expectations for this match, and they still didn't meet them. So I'm not surprised at the low rating on Cage Match, to be honest.
Yeah, the rating is 3.72 right now. Not a good match at all, but luckily, Dylan, we had another one, because Big Tom, he showed up, and he had a match that is rated 8.21 on Cage Match. That was one of the matches that people pointed to immediately after the show, as I hadn't seen it yet. What did you think about the match?
It was clearly the best match on the show, in my opinion. Yeah. I mean, no surprise, considering who's in it. Moose is a good worker, I think. A good big man. He's a guy that's athletic, can do power, can kind of do a lot there. Ishii is just so good that if you give him an inch, you take a mile. But I thought Moose did a solid job as well, living up to his thing. They did some good spots, some very crowd-friendly spots too, I thought, as well. I thought there was good psychology from Ishii working against someone like a Moose here. I thought it was a really strong match, honestly. I thought it was borderline great, even. I said this on the show. I think the cage match reviewers, I got to shout out the inmates right now, because I thought they did a really great job reviewing the show. I pretty much agree with a lot of their matches or their ratings. I was a little lower, but pretty much in the same ballpark of everything.
Yeah.
So I completely agree here, the 8.21 rating. Loved Ishii as an underdog. Love him being aggressive against the big man and standing up as the Stone Pitbull. And Moose did a good job, too, against him. So big props to these guys. They had a really good match. Best match of the show.
I was a big fan of Moose wrestling when he was still in Ring of Honor. I thought he developed to be a very, very strong wrestler very early in his career. I've seen some of his matches, some of his big matches in Impact, and I wasn't too impressed with all of those. So seeing him in this environment, of course, Ishii was a big part of that. But Moose himself brought a lot to the dance here, and I got a lot of Ring of Honor Moose vibes from this match. So both guys with a very, very strong performance. It's always impressive.
Yep. Did you see Moose's matches versus match versus Omega for the AEW title?
No, I did not.
Oh, well, there was a lot of like interference and stuff going on in there. But Moose is pretty solid. Like I said, for the talent-wise, he's got a lot of athletic ability. Yeah. I liked what he brought to the table here.
Yeah, like especially a big guy like him jumping on the ropes and doing all the stuff that he is doing here. It was impressive. But as you said, Ishii, great psychology here, coming from behind and then being able to finish off Moose was very impressive for him, definitely. Yeah, and then we got another letdown. But, well, actually, we didn't get a letdown. Because I'm not expecting anything from the Good Brothers anymore. They did a Good Brothers match, which is unfortunate because John Moxley had this great surprise of Yuji Nagata on his side, but he was just there to be the losing post against the Good Brothers. And it's just, I don't know, man. There was this tweet I came across like 2 weeks ago by Trevor Dame on Twitter, and he said, most of us are thinking that we never saw someone steal money. And he said, but we've all seen Doc Gallows wrestle.
Oh, I hate the Good Brothers. Like they're one of my least favorite acts in wrestling. They add literally nothing to anything. No. I'm so glad they're not in New Japan anymore.
I skipped this tag league that Strong did because I saw that they won the tag league.
To me, they don't even really add star power. Like I don't really understand why they're booked so strong. Like these are the epitome of like nothing. Nothing wrestlers. Like even I did like too after the match though. I think God had enough of their promo, and I don't mean like the Gorillas of Destiny, I mean like God, because their microphone got cut off. He had heard enough, he's seen enough, just like we all have, we all seen it, he had to cut the mic off, the mic got, so they wrecked their lame promo, they were talking about, oh, we built this, we're the ones, we're the real Bullet Club, we're the real New Japan, blah, 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 blah. They cut it all off, and then the Gorillas came out and Tama Tonga trash talk, which was mildly amusing, I will say.
It is always amusing when Tama Tonga does his trash talk, but the question here is, who is this match supposed to be appealing for? Because it's the Bullet Club storyline was hot before AEW started 3 years ago. And then it never went anywhere, and now we are having this match, apparently.
Well, I mean, like, the Omega Bullet Club, like Cody, that was pretty hot. That was like they built an entire WrestleMania weekend about that.
Yeah.
That was really what led into things. But after AEW came along, that all really kind of faded away, more or less. So we're kind of doing this Bullet Club deal. I will say, not to jump ahead any, but when they brought Jay into Impact, his promos as like a babyface version of this, like talking about the true Bullet Club, were very good, I thought. They have something kind of interesting with that, you know, introducing Chris Bay. And for Impact, you know, you want to have Bullet Club storylines. I get it. There's still some people that are loyal to that brand. I mean, it's less now, way less than it was 3 years ago, obviously. But it's something at least that you can kind of sink your teeth into. The match itself, I just, you know, like, I mean, even if you're the truest fan of, like, the greatest Bullet Club supporter that there could be, I really don't know if this match is really going to do a lot for you. But I will say that they build it up a lot on Twitter. So if you are, like, super online on Twitter, this might have some more appeal to you than me. Like, to me, I don't really pay attention to that as much as others. So
I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know if this match is going to be anything wild or anything hot for the crowd. I can't really tell. It was a moment, of course, for the live crowd to see G.O.D. confront the Good Brothers. Just for a moment, it was pretty cool, I guess, but I can't even imagine what the match would look like.
Oh, well, this doesn't appeal to me at all. So no. I automatically, like, me as a fan, no. I think there are some people that, like, follow all these guys on Twitter that will be okay with this, and, like, they don't even care if the match is good. They're just into the personalities. But other than that, I mean, again, that I'm not even saying that that's, like, a huge audience at this point, but I do think that there is some interest on that end, but not for me. At the end of the day, I'm just, like I said, the match was totally nothing, in my opinion. That was the one I think I differed, because I 5.68 rating on Cage Match, but I still thought it was a little high. I was very uninterested in this match, but
yeah, it was more of a 4 out of 10 match.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. A 2-star special type of deal. But seeing Nagata get his pop was cool. You know, yep. Moxley doing the salute, that was something.
It was. Then we had two main event matches on this show, and they both got a 4-star rating from the Wrestling Observer. I guess the 4-star rating is the new 3.5-star rating.
That 10-man tag match got a 4-star rating. So it's written. Dave loved this show. Like, he gave the opener 3.75. So he loved this show.
He loved the show. Yes, yes. Maybe also because of the life factor, the fans in attendance, fans being hot for a New Japan show. Mm-hmm. It was something different from the usual, I guess. And so people were really hot for those matches. I thought the Jay White versus David Finlay match was all right. I think they did a fine job for the now open weight title match in their 23-minute match. Nothing outstanding, though. Not comparable to the match that they had in the New Japan Cup, in my opinion. But still, though, like 6.84, pretty much like on the button here, I think, the Cage Match uses once again.
Here's the problem with that match and why it's not as good as the other one. In that match, Finlay was a beloved underdog that the fans rallied behind. Mm-hmm. In this match, they hated Finlay and only sided with Jay. So yeah, they still worked a heel match kind of with Jay. They did. There was a noteworthy spot where Jay shoved the ref and did a low blow, and the fans cheered. And then Finlay did a reversal of that where he shoved the referee and got a low blow as payback, and the fans all booed Finlay. So it's there's nothing worse than an unover baby face at the end of the day. And that's a really tough spot. That's why I said earlier, if it were me, he wouldn't have been in that spot. I would have put in Narita. Hey, I love Finlay as a wrestler. Like, he was always one of my favorites. Mm. And they have a great feud. But I think a thing that really hurt him, too, is that a few days before it came out where he was talking about how much he wanted to go to NXT in his podcast, which I think the fans immediately... He didn't say it like that. He was just like, oh, my dream is to wrestle with Shawn Michaels, and I'm moving to Florida. And there was a lot that people read into, so to speak, there. Maybe that's not fair. And like I said, I love Finlay as a wrestler. I really, really enjoy his work. But I think the fans were not into him. And he's just... he's never really been pushed at all in Japan, so it's kind of a tough sell, this match. I don't think anybody would have bought him anyway. But with Jay, I think Jay coming to America is such a blessing for him because he is so over in America that everybody was going to rally behind him no matter what. You know,
I got to say it was so refreshing to see heel Jay White, even though he was a babyface to the fans. It was so refreshing to see heel Jay White without Ghetto by his side, because that's what I've always been saying. I'm usually a fan of Jay White, but with Ghetto at his side, the act is just absolutely unbearable. And this heel Jay White, I can get much more behind.
He's a babyface to me. Like, I don't even think he was a heel. Like, here, like, the fans loved him.
But he clearly did some heel stuff too.
At Impact, he's much more of a babyface too, teaming with Chris Bay, like recruiting him. Like, he's still got a little bit of an edge to him, but, you know, yeah, you might be right here. I don't think he'll be heel for long if you want to even count this as a heel, just because he's too over. Like, to the fans, it's like, he's not going to be, like, they're not going to, to me, there's nobody on the show that the American fans will cheer over Jay. So I think it's going to be really tough. Like, the only one would be Tanahashi.
Maybe. I was just going to say, there's one.
Maybe. I don't know about that, because there's a lot of Bullet Club fans.
Yes, like there is, but when you saw the reactions for Tanahashi post-match, it reminded me of Tanahashi in 2014-15 and the reactions that he got after his main event performances, where it took him like 30 minutes to go to the backstage area because all fans rushed to the guardrail and just wanted Tanahashi to just high-five them. Women were holding up their babies for Tanahashi to bless their children. It was similar to this one because the crowd was really, really into Tanahashi. And
they popped for the title change as much as anything. Like I said, yeah. I was pretty surprised by that. I feel a little... All right, so let me just come back to semi-main. As a match, it wasn't anything too great. Like I said, I think the fans probably heard it a little, but it was all right. In the main event, I thought, you know, I feel bad for Archer because he had this really quick title reign with the U.S. title. Like, him winning the U.S. title was a big deal for him.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably one of his biggest accomplishments. And it was really just a transitional title reign to kind of draw at the Moxley and Tanahashi match at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Tanahashi was super over, and the crowd popped, especially for the finish. I think the title change was a little bit of a surprise to some people. I mean, it was a great moment. Anytime you get a title change, like, that's just a great feeling to have. And I think the energy was so well built throughout the last couple of matches. I mean, you know, they were having a party for Jay in the semi-main event, and Tanahashi was getting great pops. The fans really came through for the show. As a match, I didn't think it was that great either, to be honest with you. It was good.
It was fine.
Yeah, like, it was a fine match. 6.70 rating.
They ran some of the sequences from earlier Tanahashi and Lance Archer matches they had in the G1 years ago, and they did some of the best of moves Tanahashi and Archer can come up with, like, for example, the sling blade counter. Then he even took the what's his finishing move, the blackout. He even took the blackout and came back then with the high fly flow, classic Tanahashi finish in a main event that he would have on a, I don't mean this as a disrespect, but this would be a match that he would have on a, like, Destruction in Kobe Day 2 main event show.
Yeah. You know, it was a solid match. Like I said, it wasn't anything wrong with it, but it wasn't anything too special either. It was more about the moment than the match itself. They did do a good job of really establishing Tana as a babyface, I thought. Mm-hmm. You know, Archer controlled a lot of the match. You know, obviously he has a big size advantage. I do think he's another guy that I really like his whole aura about him. I think he's super expressive, very charismatic guy. He's a very talented guy, too. I kind of wish he would tone it down a little bit and focus more on the, like I said, everybody dives. I want to see some destruction. I don't want to see, like, walking the ropes, you know.
Listen, Dylan, I've been over this on many, many shows.
Well, that's just because he loses a lot. But I'm saying even his wrestling, though, I don't think really fits that mantra. Like, I don't want to see him walking the ropes. I want to see him throwing people around and smashing stuff.
He usually is doing that on AEW Dark. Like, when he faces, like, random guy A, he just tosses the guy. He just tosses him. The guy doesn't even get an entrance because Lance Archer just searches the poor guy backstage and just tosses him out and just beats him in, like, 1 minute.
Yeah, like I said, give me more of that. Like, yeah. I said, I mean, you can't do that against Tanahashi, but you can throw him around and be mass destruction, like I said, which I don't know. Like, when you give him the claw, yeah, like, I'm all about it. I love the claw. Like I said, give me the claw. That's what I want to see. But yeah, you know, like I said, and he was in a tough spot anyway, because on AEW, he's like a babyface. But here, he's more like a heel, because he's against Tanahashi. So it was a really kind of awkward... Everything about this was awkward, and they could have done a better job caring for that. But in the end, it turned out fine, and the crowd loved it at the end. They loved the title change. They loved Tanahashi. Tanahashi looks like a superstar. And the title, I thought, got elevated throughout all of this, because now you have a champion that is super over with the fans. And I think moving kind of – obviously, they had different plans for the U.S. title, but I definitely think kind of segregating some of the titles to America would be – a great move for everybody involved, because Strong doesn't really have that main title. They have the Strong title, but it's not really, like I said, most people don't watch Strong to this point. So that's why they didn't have a match on the show.
And the Strong champion was in a 10-man tag match on the undercard.
Yeah, exactly. So like the NEVER title, the U.S. title have more cachet with the fans. So to have all of those titles on the show, I think would be a very smart move. Again, we know Tanahashi's going to come back to Japan with it. But with Jay seemingly situated in America, mm-hmm. obviously we have everything going on with the world title. I'm sure we're about to get into that was also on this show. I think it's a smart. They did some very smart things in terms of this whole show really felt like a step forward for New Japan Strong and New Japan in America in general, because it feels like they haven't come close to really taking the advantage of the steps that I thought they should have in the past. But now it feels like this is almost like a new start for the entire show.
Yeah,
and the entire
they company. Set up a lot of stuff for upcoming shows and upcoming tapings. They laid out a lot of things. And the brand itself, yes, too. I just want to say about Archer, I think for him it was just cool to be here in this main event situation in New Japan, because usually on AEW, I wouldn't say it's an afterthought, because every once in a while, he gets big matches, like for the TNT title and stuff. But it's not like that he is a big focused talent on these shows. But here he was in the main event against one of the biggest stars in New Japan history. I guess for him, this was a great vindication to be in the main event of a New Japan show without being in New Japan in 2 years now.
Yeah, you know, he goes from mid-card status to being a main eventer here, so
right.
It's good for him. Wrestling somebody everybody respects, I'm sure he respects a lot. They kind of reiterated his babyface status at the end of the match, where he was like, yeah, I always respected you as the ace.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a good little deal, all in all. I thought he, you know, I like him as a talent. But in AEW, things can get murky because there's so much. We were just talking off the air. There's so many guys on the roster that, you know, there's a lot to deal with there. But he's a good performer, and the match was solid. And, you know, it all worked out at the end of the day. So you have to take it as a mark of success for him main eventing this well-liked and respected show.
Yes, absolutely. And about the NEVER title, you brought it up. Tomohiro Ishii challenged for the title. Because coming off his win against Moose, he came out after the semi-main. When do you think they can do this match?
They have a show coming up in September.
Yes, but Ishii is not announced for that show yet. And do you really think they would let Ishii out of the G1?
Why not? Look at everyone else they've let out. To be honest, I actually think it would be kind of smart for him to go to America. I think he's more over in America than Japan. Not
he
he's not over in Japan. But it's just like I said, it depends on what their overall intentions are for this whole U.S. project.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, look at the guys they've left over here. Some of their biggest push stars at this point.
Yeah.
For me as a fan, I would much rather Ishii in the G1. But they already set it up. Maybe they could do something on Impact with Ishii if they want him for the G1. You know,
maybe they can do something on AEW with Ishii too.
Yeah, I mean, Jay did kind of tease that in his promo after the match, where he was like, "I can show up anywhere, even AEW."
Why not?
You know, and that's the one thing when we talk about like the hotness of the brand. That is the one thing that can help the American promotion. That you know, if they play their cards right, is that if you have these guys in New Japan Strong and they appear on AEW, that's a huge step up for pretty much everybody. And they've done some, like, you know, like one-off type of deals with like Kenta in the past. Nagata was there for a week. You know, they had that video with Tanahashi already setting something up. So they have a little bit of stuff going on here and there. But if they had a more consistent presence on AEW, that I think would definitely help the brand take a big step up to American viewers in general. But yeah, you know, they could do something. Ishii and White on Dynamite or Rampage would be a great match to have. I think anytime you get Ishii anywhere, you automatically improve your show, no matter who you are, where you are, what you're doing. Ishii is just that level of performer. So yeah, if they want him in G1, sure, do it earlier on. I'm fine with that, but they are going to need a main event for that September show. And, you know, I think that would be an interesting fit as well. It's a possibility.
Yes, you talked about the guys that they're leaving out. I'm just looking at the list of wrestlers announced for that September 25, September 26 taping. And, of course, there is David Finlay, Juice Robinson, Lance Archer, Minoru Suzuki, all these guys like Carl Fredericks, Chris Dickinson, Brody King, Fred Russell, Leo Rush, Hikuleo. Then there's Minoru Suzuki, also announced for this set of tapings. Jay White, of course, Filthy Tom Lawler. And then the guy that returned on this show to a big surprise and, I gotta say, to a great reaction from the crowd, Will Ospreay, who came out to basically deliver a quote-unquote shoot promo where he called himself the real world champion because he wasn't beaten for the title. And gotta say, that is always what I point out, what my favorite kind of heel is, when a heel actually has a point. I'm not saying that that Will Ospreay is my kind of my favorite heel, but he, even in commentary, Kevin Kelly admitted that he had a point because New Japan, they stripped him of the championship, even though the four-month span, that apparently is the period in which you have to defend the IWGP World Heavyweight title in, that hadn't gone by yet, and they stripped him of the title before, and they crowned the new champion in Shingo Takagi, and Will Ospreay called himself the real world champion with, like, Carl Fredericks, Clark Connors, and TJP coming out to confront Ospreay there. What did you take from this?
Okay, like, if you just read the words on paper, then what he said was really good. He cut mm-hmm. a kind of a great promo, actually. Because, like you said, everything was really good in terms of what he said. He had a great point that he made. It was very interesting because this is something that I really had no thought of, that they would do something like this at all. You know, I never had any. I figured, I made this point, like, when all of that started with him in Japan, I said, from him, you can't say it's a dumb move, because as a wrestler, like, if I were in his shoes and I, whatever his reasons were for wanting out, in his mind, they can't fire me because they have to, and they can't fire me right away because they at least have to have this money match with me and the champion. Like, that's an automatic match that they won't throw away. So I could see why he was not afraid to drop the title. Because remember, at that time, people were saying, oh, he's going to NXT UK. And I was like, what? I was like, no. Like, because that's what I'm saying. Like, they wouldn't just, they would have to do that match, him versus the champion, you know, in his mind. If they were really, really pissed about it, maybe you could worry about that. But clearly, he knew that that wasn't going to happen. But now they've taken this alternative approach to it. With him having the title, him claiming himself as the world champion, I never thought that they were going to do that. So I thought this was a pretty ballsy move, all things considered, for New Japan.
I was pretty surprised that he showed up too, because Shoto Umino was supposed to be on that show too, and it didn't really work out for him because he was in the UK as well. So I didn't really figure that anyone from the UK would be on that show.
And we don't even know if he was in the UK ever to begin with. This could have been a long-term plan than we know about. He could have been in America for a while now. I'm not saying he was. I'm just saying we don't know.
It could have been a distraction too, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, also at the same time, it seems like the rules for New Japan and the stars and who they want don't always seem to apply to some people as well. So you could easily see him in UK. But, yeah, so I thought it was a ballsy move for him to be there. His actual promo, I thought it sucked, like, completely, because he's such a clear, this is my whole problem with this whole gimmick and him in general. It comes across like he's trying so hard, and he's being this heel that's like, oh, I watched 10 Conor McGregor promos before this, you know, like, oh, I must have had a, like, I know exactly what I'm going to say to these LA geeks now. And, like, that may be cool to some people, but for me, it came across really phony and forced. And, like, nothing he says really sounds very genuine. It sounds like a guy playing heel, more or less. And that's kind of always been my problem with him, is that he's so over the top that I can't really take him that serious.
Funny thing is that he has toned it down in comparison to when he first started this gimmick in Japan.
When he came out drinking the brandy and all
yes!
that.
Yes!
Yeah, and, like, and he doesn't fit, like, him as, like, Ric Flair, like, light, is not appealing to me at all. Like, I don't understand who gave him that idea or why he's taking it that way. I did think the ending confrontation with Shibata storming the ring and him running through the crowd, that was really well done. And I think, like I said, the content of his promo was really strong. It set up feuds with, like, four different people, including Shibata, on there. But most importantly, the title. Like that being in there was so good. Mm-hmm. I do question them putting him in America because I wonder what the reaction will be. As you said, from one night only, the reaction was pretty strong for him, like live in the building, and everybody was talking about this one way or the other.
Actually,
so it clearly
a great idea in my opinion, because you can do IWGP World Title matches both in Japan and in America right now.
Yeah, that's a good point there. I that's something that, again, I don't know if you ever came up with this, but I never thought about this. We never talked about it, like him coming back with the title.
No, I never thought about it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I never would have thought about this. So I love the creative booking that of that. I think that this is also setting up potential seeds for the future, obviously. Like I said, the biggest feud of all is him with the real world champion at the
exactly.
end of the day.
That, in my opinion, at this point, would be the direction for the Tokyo Dome.
I absolutely agree. I think it's obvious
yes.
that that he is coming back for the Dome. Okada winning the G1 and going through Shingo and Ospreay, I think is a totally logical main event. Or you could have Shingo and Ospreay the main event, and then Okada.
You could do both, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But this is another year where they set up an obvious road to the Double Dome, which is kind of impressive that they've gone through three different years and done it. And in this case, it's something different than we've seen before with the tournament type of aspect. Here, it's much more like the titles held in controversy type of deal. I think it's pretty interesting that I have to give them credit. I definitely have many, many issues with Gato as a booker.
Yes,
but for this, to set up the main event of the Tokyo Dome, I think this was incredibly creative, courageous even, and I think it's pretty smart. To be honest, I'm going to give him credit for that one because I think.
Yeah, me too. We've been down on New Japan a lot this year, but I really would say that they did a good job in setting up a lot of stuff for the fall and for the beginning of the new year.
Absolutely. And we're right around the corner of G1. And I think even now, with how things have gone, which I think is a good segue to where we're going with all of this, I think a lot of people are talking about it because we don't, nobody knows what the hell's going to happen with all these people in America at the time.
That would be my next question for you, Dylan, because I have thought about this too, of course. There is Will Ospreay, there is Jay White and David Finlay, Juice Robinson as well. They've been on Impact. And why do you think it is that they are leaving them out of the G1 climax?
To me, if you're going to go as far to have the quote-unquote real world champion on your American brand, because he said in that promo, keep in mind, this is my home now, New Japan right. Strong. So it's clear to me they're trying to take a step forward with this American brand. Him and Jay White have both been heavily pushed stars. I think that they want to make a step forward with New Japan Strong with the foreigners at the lead. I think that's the closest answer, and they have determined, which I agree with, to be honest, but rightly or wrongly, that the G1 doesn't need these guys as much as foreign wrestlers. They want to focus it on the Japanese guys. With everything going on with COVID right now, you have easier paths with the Japanese wrestlers. Maybe they were a little spooked by what happened with Ospreay even as well. You could say that could be something as well. So, that's just speculation on my part.
Yeah, speculation. Absolutely. Speculation on my part is the things that I thought about. It's just purely speculation. I've not talked to any of these guys. It's just speculation. But thinking of what happened earlier this year in May and April, May, when the COVID situation really got out of hand in New Japan, my gut feeling is that Jay White, David Finlay, Juice Robinson, they just told the company, we're not returning to Japan unless you get the situation under control. And as we're looking at it right now, they pretty much don't have it under control because Shingo Takagi and Bushi, they're down with COVID right now. We're not sure yet if Shingo Takagi will be able to return. We're thinking that the time frame could work out for him, but you can't really be sure about that. And
well, if that happens, then he's losing the title.
Exactly.
Which would throw everything into disarray once more.
Yeah, because New Japan's rule is if you can't wrestle on a scheduled title match, you're losing the title.
World champion evil in the dome. Please get well soon, Shingo. Please.
Let's not assume the worst here.
So, yeah, yes.
The point I'm making is Takagi and Bushi, the wording of what New Japan put out on their American website really caught me off guard because I didn't expect them to be that, how am I supposed to say that, that careless maybe about their roster? Because Takagi and Bushi, they came to this show with fever and then basically were sent back to wherever. And I think Tuplai was responded to the Eastern Lariat account that they didn't have hotel rooms for the wrestlers, so they were just on the road. And to that, I gotta say, if that's the case, your entire protocol sucks. Because in these days, you should like really take care of your wrestlers in a more responsible way than just to put them on the road. So I don't know, man. This whole situation to me screams that they're like placing them on this American brand because there's something to do for them. But as you said, Finlay rumored to be interested in going elsewhere, and we've had the rumors with Jay White earlier this year too. But with a new situation that NXT is apparently moving to, I don't know if there is any room on NXT for those guys. I certainly don't think that there is any room for like a guy like Jay White on NXT going forward now.
Finlay has the end because his dad's there.
Absolutely.
New Japan, I mean, what you just said about their protocol leaving him on the road, I mean, that's just embarrassing. Like, what are they thinking? But I mean, it's on the
2AW has handled the situation better than New Japan did because they suspended like eight guys, not like eight, but they had eight guys in quarantine and they suspended a bunch of guys because they just didn't obey to the protocol. And that's the only company that I know of that has done such things.
Yeah, I mean,
2AW.
You know, Wiz and New Japan specifically. This isn't anything new because the entire company has been in disarray all year, pretty much. We heard a lot of rumors, again, that Will Ospreay thing kind of opened up a can of worms in a lot of ways and a lot of speculation and things like that. And this is just a continuing oversight. There's poor quality control and management going on right now in New Japan. I'm not sure who to point the finger at and who's responsible for all of this, but I mean, you can't be doing that, like leaving guys on the side of the road. Like you're risking, like you're playing with fire and they could be getting burned with their world champion at the end of the day. Like you said, they should have cared a little bit more, even not just on a business sense, if you're going to put it that way. Never mind the moral obligation to protect these guys and try to do your best for them, but just on a business sense, you're risking guys on your roster for this. So you have to really do a better job. So
you're not risking like any guy. You're risking the world champion.
Exactly. And I mean, like, look how it's come back to bite them. So that's a great point on your part. Like you said, these foreigners may have just been like, look, like we're out for a while. And
them stay in the dojo.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to blame a lot of the wrestlers for wanting to be in America over Japan right now. And maybe that could be something. Maybe some of the Japanese talents could say something like, hey.
Yeah, I mean, Ozuki, I'm out of here.
Like, you know, this G1's cool and all, but like I said, let me hang out in America for a little while. Right. Before, you know, maybe we could get a vaccine.
Imagine Minoru Ozuki showing up on a GCW show.
Didn't they book that at some point? Like, not like now, but like in the past, they had him on some GCW show.
I think they did.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Bring it back. Like, it could be. But I mean, he was at the bottom of the bracket last year. The Suzuki was like second to last in his block. So losing him is not a big deal in terms of the booking. Maybe there could be somebody else that we're not thinking about that could be sent over. It's just crazy when you think about all
that.
Oh,
he was on Bloodsport. Yeah.
No, yeah, I definitely remember that. Like I said, I think they had him against
no other GCW show.
Like I said, I guess so. Like I said, I'm not exactly super in tune with the indies, but that's just something I remember. But hey, you know, depending on what they could do, maybe they can make up for lost time. You know, when it comes to that.
Yep. So, as we're talking about the title situation, the world title in America, the world title in Japan, I was thinking, what's the G1 going to look like? And I have four options here right now. And actually, as we talked about the Tokyo Dome show, the fourth option that I'm going to lay out to you, Dylan, sounds somewhat appealing. So the last year's blocks, Block A was Kota Ibushi, Will Ospreay, Jay White, Okada, Taichi, Jeff Cobb, Tomohiro Ishii, Shingo Takagi, Minoru Suzuki, and Yujiro Takahashi, obviously. Osprey, White, and Suzuki are out this year. Then there was Block B, Zanada, Evil, Naito, Kenta, Zack Sabre Jr., Tanahashi, Hiroki Goto, Juice Robinson, Toru Yano, and Yoshihashi, and Robinson is out. And then there is these ideas that I had. Of course, you could add the third generation once again.
Then, no, they're all retired, though, except for Kojima. He's the only one that can be in there.
That's true. The only one is, yeah, that's true. So this option is out.
Yeah.
Then there is something that people always go to on Twitter. Are there going to be wrestlers from other Japanese companies? And until they announce it, I'm not going to believe that's actually happening. How about you?
Oh, I completely agree with that. I think the only difference this time is that we had a New Japan wrestler wrestle on a great show. So mm-hmm. Has not happened like recently. So with that said, if desperate times call for desperate measures,
yeah,
they could say, hey,
I mean, it would pop so hard for T-Hawk in the G1.
Yeah, and he's already in All Japan's tournament.
Hey, I think the G1 is actually the one tournament that he still didn't wrestle in the last 3 years because he was in every other tournament.
Yeah, that and Noah. Strong Hearts are not they're banned from
right,
Noah for
some, right, in Noah
some
too. Reason. Yeah, yeah. He was in Noah. But he was in the Fire Festival, he was in the Big yes. Japan tournament, he wasn't in every tournament possible.
Yeah, that's right. He was in that Big Japan tournament. You're totally right on that. But yes, that could be a place he could be. Part of me would hate this, but also pop for it if somehow Shima weaseled his way into a G1 spot. would be very hilarious to me.
Jesus. Yes, yes.
But that would be very interesting if that happened. But I'm with you. In my heart, I don't think that would happen until it happens, pretty much. But I do think that there is a little bit more hope this year because we saw show in great.
Option three, other foreigners? Who could they go to?
They're gonna have to deal with a lot of quarantine stuff. They're gonna have to deal with a lot of quarantine stuff.
I don't know, man. I don't know how the quarantine situation still is in America. I'm not sure about.
I've read that it's very hard to get a visa for Japan right now.
Okay.
Like, to be honest, I mean, I don't want to. Again, the rules don't always apply if you have enough money.
Because in Europe, it's different from each country to the other country. For example, coming from the UK to Germany in the last 2 weeks, you didn't have to go through quarantine. But if you're coming from like Southern Europe to Germany, you have to go through quarantine. So it's
just
always
getting into
different.
Japan right now. Like it's totally different because of how everything is.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
and they are the only letting. I read that they are only letting so much foreigners into the country. Yeah, it would be difficult, definitely.
Is there anybody who would have a visa already? Like that would be like an AEW guy or something like that.
I would think Moxley.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. And you know, if they wanted, like he's probably not. You know, I'm sure he'd be open to that.
Omega,
you can't count on Omega. Right. I would say he was kind of my speculation before that. I thought he might have a role in New Japan sooner rather than later.
Hangman Page.
Hangman, I don't know if he has a visa, but if he does, bring him on. they're not doing a title match.
Think about guys who have history with New Japan.
Oh well, I mean, I'm more worried. Like I said, that's cool, but I'm saying more like the visa. Like, you know, because that's the problem. It's not necessarily like the company. It's more so the country. Like, you can't
got a wise one. Japan. Matt Sydal.
Oh, well, it definitely won't be him.
No? Okay.
He couldn't get in even if there was no virus.
Okay.
I don't make the rules. I'm just saying.
Yeah, the fourth option that I have and that I'm kind of warming up to now. I thought it was just something that I came across on Twitter, but I don't know. How about when all these guys are in America, how about they just do a American version of the G1 Climax?
That was something I had kind of thought about myself, that perhaps the blocks this year would be more like 10 in Japan and 10 in America.
But it's difficult with the schedule. You can't get them back into the country for the G1 final in Japan. What you could do, though, would be a match between the two G1 winners on the first day of the Tokyo Dome shows.
Yeah, that would be another thing. If they hadn't have done that thing with Osprey, I think that I might have bought into that a little bit more. Also, the problem is like, where are all these strong shows going to come from? Where it's like you have a block of 10 people, that's going to require a lot of matches, and they don't have that many shows. So that's it's just.
They only have these two set of tapings announced, so that's going to be rather difficult. So
just logistically, that there's a problem with that. But I do think you missed an obvious answer here.
I don't want this obvious answer.
Okay, well, what do you think the obvious answer is then?
Longer matches.
No, that was not my. Was not the obvious answer at all. That's the worst case scenario again. Okay, so let's just break this down. So we've got Osprey, Jay, Suzuki, Juice. They're all out, and maybe even more. Yes, that's another show, unfortunately. But they're out of the G1. Let's just say. So we've got those guys. I think we know Chase is coming in to replace one of them. We know Okan's going to be one of them. So it leaves two open spots. Mm-hmm. To me, Kojima's the obvious answer. You've retired.
I mean, we just went over this in the last couple of years, but if he's not in this tournament, he's never going to get back in there.
Yeah, like there's just no other options, to be honest with you, on the company. So it would have to be, like I said, they've already retired Nagata, retired Tenzan from the G1. Nakanishi's just retired at this point. He definitely won't be him. Kojima coming in would fill that third spot. The fourth spot is where things get interesting to me, because then you have a fourth spot open. Who could that possibly be? Like at the end of the day, if you look at their roster, and I have the answer, to be honest with you, who I think it should be. I don't know if they'll have the guts to do it, but and even then, their current booking makes things a little dicey. But to me, they have an answer. Somebody who could be a top star, who could be somebody. And this is what I said when we were talking about that
on the Kojima, obviously.
When we were talking about it on the Kojima show, I kind of mentioned that like the main thing about G1 is getting people talking. The new entrants, right? Chase and Okan are not doing that. They're not having buzz. They're not having star power. They're not getting the fans talking, saying, oh, he's never wrestled X, Y, and Z new matches. Master Wato doesn't do that either. So he is disqualified from this.
I love how you just calmly continued with your point as I brought up the most ridiculous answer possible.
I've watched some of Wato. He's better now than he was a year ago. But, I mean, it's a low bar to clear. I will say that. But he's definitely not G1 level. But to me, you have another junior in Hiromu. If he came into G1, that would add buzz. And like that's what I'm looking for with this mystery fourth man. Because those guys are good. Like Kojima, that's a nice story. But in reality, we know he's not winning anything. Or having like he's wrestled all these guys a million times. Okan and Chase, nobody cares about having matches with anybody.
I really hope that he just doesn't win the junior title.
And that's why I kind of had a feeling that that's where they were going anyway, because to do this match right away is such a throwaway match.
Right.
And I like Eagles as champion. I think he'll have good matches. I thought that match with Desperado was by far his best of his title reign. Eagles is a great talent, and I don't know if he'll have the star power to really elevate the division, but he'll have good matches. And that's all I'm really looking for at the champions.
How far are you going to go as junior champion in New Japan Pro Wrestling?
Oh, not very far at all. I mean, you're undercard, period. Like I said, I felt that way for. I mean, that's just how they booked forever. Even when Hiromu's champion, I mean, he's been able to get his personality over and his character over to that level. But they never, you know, they had that one little thing where they had him versus Evil, and that did a great reaction. To an absolutely wonderful reaction. If you put him in the G1, you get that buzz because he's somebody that everybody would want to know what's he going to do, how many wins is he going to have, and what if they put him versus Naito in a block? You're telling me they never did that match before. They've had that tease that they've never gone to. So you're telling me Hiromu versus Tanahashi, Ibushi, and Naito isn't going to be an interesting block? I think that makes up for any, like, okay, losing these guys. To be honest, I'm not really losing sleep over any of those guys, like Juice, Jay, Will, or Suzuki. But to me, Hiromu is better than all of those guys combined, more interesting, and just more buzz around them. Even if those guys were still in, Osprey would because of the controversy. Like that would get people talking again. He's kind of like a lightning rod of a guy. But the other guys, it's like they've been around, they've been in the G1 before. and Hiromu's a new face. You get new matches. That's my answer to it. Put Hiromu in the G1 and build a new star out of him and get him away from that junior division as much as possible. Because otherwise, let's look at their roster here. I'm gonna give you the roster here. I'm gonna give you some options.
Please don't. Okay. Please don't. No.
Yeah. I mean, these are your options. At the end of the day, I'm not saying that you have to put them in. I'm just saying they're options. At the end of the day, this comes to us from the wonderful website of cagematch.net. Not that I have anything to do with that, but it's just a wonderful website everyone loves. Okay, so you have, and this is an interesting person. I think he could be somebody to look at. Hinari.
I was just going to say, where has he been? I completely forgot about him.
A lot of people did. I think.
The last match he had was on Dontaku in May.
Could he be
injured?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't have the answer to that at the end of the day. If you don't want to put Kojima in, maybe you could put Hinari in his place as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said.
Yeah. Just a post I came across, he has a neck injury.
Okay, so he'll probably be out at the moment.
Probably be out. Let's see. Currently on the shelf with a neck injury. Okay, right now I've been going back and forth for the last 5 years, blah, 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 but this time was my neck. The guy jumped off the top rope and landed right on my head, and I almost got paralyzed. Luckily, we do some neck exercise, as you can see in wrestling. Yeah, that sounds really bad.
Yeah, hopefully his neck is good. You know, basically, wrestling training, they'll always have you do like neck bridges and stuff to build up your neck. So hopefully he's doing all right on that end, but he might not be in the G1, but he's the first name on the list. Alphabetically, you have Fale.
Nope.
Yeah, we don't want Fale at the end of the day.
And we have been very positive on him always, but nope.
Not always, not the last couple of years. Maybe like when we first started doing this. Yeah, four or 5 years ago, yeah, we liked Fale, but after that I think the time had come pretty much for all of that. Then we have Kojima, as I said.
Yeah.
Tonga did put on Twitter that he wanted to be put in the G1, which is weird because he's in America right now.
Mm-hmm.
But The Gorillas, their options, I guess.
Tangaloa, I would take.
Yeah, Tangaloa, I would love to see get a shot, because I think you'd have a lot of fresh matches there. You have Makabe.
Yep, sure. You can just throw him in, and he will have decent matches.
Honma.
Oh, Jesus.
That's he's the last one. Yeah, he's maybe like 5 years ago again. Yes, maybe not now. So the options, the point I'm making, these are slim pickings, so to speak. So, and you have to have four guys to fill it out if you're going to do that. So to me, the obvious answer is give Kojima his last run and put Hiromu in the tournament to back it. Because like I said, we know Chase and O'Connell will be there. You have two more open spots. To me, Kojima and Hiromu are the answer.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that is what I have on New Japan Pro Wrestling. Do you have anything else to add?
We can talk about the show turn. He's another guy you might want to look at.
All right, the show turn. Yes.
Yeah. They finally broke up Roppongi 3K after a million matches that they've had.
Yeah, and in the most like uninteresting way possible in this throwaway junior tag league.
I love how they did it before. It's so unimportant that they did it before the final match, and then their final match, the other team didn't even want to wrestle in it, so it was a double forfeit with Gato and...
They had to forfeit because they are in quarantine as well.
A double forfeit.
Then. Double forfeit, yes.
Unbelievable. So, very uninteresting tag league. I don't know what they were thinking, even doing that tournament.
Just send Sho to Great and have him have matches there.
Sho as a heavyweight could be kind of interesting. I take him over a lot of these other guys I just read, for sure. And maybe it's a Hiromu thing. Maybe Hiromu like desperately wants to be the junior division. I've always said this. Whenever this kind of thing comes up, like so and so wants X, I say I don't care what he wants. You do what I tell you to do. If I ran the company, just like remember when Omega was whining about him and Ibushi doing that G1 match because he's like it needs to be at the Dome. I'd say, no, it doesn't need to be at the Dome. You wrestle who I tell you to wrestle. You know, same deal here. Or even like Liger losing all the time. If I wanted him to win the title, I'd say, you're winning that title, you son of a bitch. I won't let you lose, no matter how much you want it. But, no. But, like, for real, though, like, if Hiromu wants to be a junior, I'd tell him no. Like, you have too much value to this company, too much potential. We need baby faces. We need young guys. We need people that are fresh-faced, that people love. You have a connection that these other guys don't have. That's what I would be telling Hiromu right now, if that's a thing. But, you know, if they are just saying, okay, well, I guess we need somebody in the junior division, Sho could be a good option as well. You know, you could him in a block with Shingo, continue that rivalry, put him in there against some of these other guys, do some good things, you know. So, you know, there's some options, I guess. But the Sho turn, yes, it was very uninspiring. But a lot of people I saw were talking about that, at least.
Yeah,
I think it's a long-term team at the end of the day, right? Whether you love them or hate them or are just indifferent to them or just like them, but also the division is so stale and terrible that you can't really be interested in them. I think the turn, breaking up a 5-6-year-long team, that means something at the end of the day. So I appreciate that they did it. I think Yo has been hanging around Sho far too long, and hopefully they can both take Yo needs a complete revamp, in my opinion. And Sho can move forward and take a good step ahead. So I think it's worth saying, at least.
I came across this great tweet by Karen at Hey Karen Sensei on Twitter. She's been on WH's Post Perezo Sho in the
She's past. A big fan of 4PG3K.
She is, and she noticed something great, actually, because she noticed that for someone who is a fashionista, she says, and a neat freak, Yo's Roppongi 3K knee pad has been falling apart for weeks, and he never fixed it.
Mm.
See? Foreshadowing.
That deep storytelling right there with Yo. Hopefully he gets better gear in the future, I guess.
Hopefully. Yes. I wouldn't fix this gear either.
Yeah, maybe that's what he's thinking. He's like, man, this sucks. Yeah. Like, I don't want to waste time with this. If it falls off, it falls out. Let's just go, Sho. Let's just do it. And Sho's like, man, you suck. Like, but I like that they made the turn finally. And like in general, like look at this whole.
What do you think about my awesome gear? Oh, you suck.
That's exactly what that conversation went. I'm sure. I remember when he came back, everyone was like, "Oh, I guess Yo's turning heel. He's in all black."
Yeah.
And they did some kind of podcast. They were like, "Hey, did you hear everyone thinks I'm going to turn heel on you? Like, because I'm in all black." And Sho's like, I thought it would be different. I thought your color scheme would be a little different, but it's cool. Like, you know, like that was pretty much the
tone. Weird. Like, I don't know what he thought of when he returned in all black. He was supposed to be this, like Roppongi 3K, like they are supposed to be this idol group, and
yeah,
I mean coming back in all black. While there is still a group around that wears all black in the Bullet Club.
And, yeah, that's true. A lot of all black stables, even LIJ. All black. Very dark. Gimmick. Maybe that's where he could join now. Get a revamp, join LIJ.
Awesome.
That would be something cool. And in general, I gotta say, New Japan, they're not always my favorite company, but I appreciate that they're doing a lot of different things.
I mean, nothing can be worse than what they did in the last year, but they're trying stuff now.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, I was always softer on the evil push than a lot of people because I would rather them try something different. They executed it so terribly that I hated it. But at the same time, I would rather them at least Sho effort and try than like, oh, here's another Okada title reign for you. Like, that to me would be the worst thing they could have done. Now that they've held off on it, him actually winning the title isn't that bad. Like, it comes across like a very natural storyline and a great progression for all involved. It's actually helped Okada and the company. You know, to do something different, the evil stuff, it sucked. It clearly didn't get over to the extent it should have. But at the end of the day, they're trying different things. And I appreciate that. The stables are making up. They have a new group with the Empire, Sho, which Sho joined, by the way. They had to kind of – it's funny because they had Okan be like, oh, well, we don't care what Ospreay's doing in America in his promo. So they kind of had to shuffle the deck a little bit. Shingo as champion, they're doing different things, and I appreciate that, at least, even though, like I said, I think the way they run their shows, it's so hard to get invested emotionally, like with all of the cork.
I've not watched any of those Summer Struggle shows because I'm just looking at those cards. I'm looking at this tournament. I'm just not interested.
Oh, I mean, the tournament was just a complete joke. Like, I can't believe they even did that. The junior division is in shambles right now. It's always bad. It's always been bad. Like, I've always said that it's just a terrible division. No stars, no star power, no interest among the local fans. But now it's a complete joke when they do this tag team tournament. I don't know what they were thinking. The only thing I've really tried to pay attention to was the six-man titles matches, because they're always good.
Yep.
You know, I always enjoy watching them. It'll be interesting to see what they have planned with Ishii. Again, they kind of set him up with Jay. If they could always say, hey, he's going to be announced for the September show. But hopefully he'll stay in the G1, because I would much rather him have all those matches and help the tournament around. I'd much rather them have the six-man titles for longer, because they're making a legacy with these titles. And who would have thought that a year and a half ago, six-man titles would have any legacy? So there's some things that I like about the company. I think just the way they run their shows in terms of the way they book their shows and the cards and the number of shows make it very hard to be emotionally invested. But I don't think they're doing terribly, like, overall when it comes to that. They just have a lot, and they have a lot going against them too with the COVID and how poorly they're mismanaging everything as well. So the wrestlers are trying hard, and I appreciate that. But yeah, it's not the best time. But I do think that the G1 is at least interesting, and there's good speculation on how exactly they're going to fill out this tournament with all these people going.
So there's a lot of speculation on this show already.
Absolutely.
Yep. On the topic, actually, of trying new things or trying different things, Dylan, Pro Wrestling Noah, they had a show in Kawasaki on last weekend as well, on August 15. Noah Kawasaki Go, where they did a double title match. Takashi Sugiura, the DHT national champion, defended against the 0-1 world heavyweight champion in Masato Tanaka. And Takashi Sugiura now is the double champion for Noah and for 0-1. This was a match that almost went 40 minutes, and right now, based on 62 votes, we have a rating of 8.97. When I returned from Bielefeld this past weekend, I sat down and I immediately watched this Noah show, because I read a lot of things about this main event. And this hype for the match on Twitter, it was absolutely well-deserved, because these two guys, in Takashi Sugiura, I've drafted him. I've done a draft with Flosh on my German podcast in Straight Wrestling. And we've done a prime versus present draft. And I've drafted Takashi Sugiura in the present region, because I still think, you could, of course, go and say Takashi Sugiura has had his prime in years such and such, but you can also just say this guy is great right now. And
you could just say his prime was like 20 years.
Whereas other wrestlers have a 5-year prime, he is just in his prime since 2006.
Yes, even 2004, he had a great match with a tournament participant, Kendo Kashin. He had a great tag match with him and Kendo versus Kenta versus Marufuji in 2004. One of my favorite junior tag title matches. That's when Sugiura was still a junior. This is how far this goes back. But I don't think anyone would consider Kendo Kashin an ideal junior in 2004. But Sugiura, that bastard made it work, and I love him for it.
And when you just look at Masato Tanaka as well, and Rob, he's the flag bearer for this. Masato Tanaka has had an incredible year, and he might very well be a good choice for most underrated as well, because he has had so many outstanding matches, but a lot of them fly totally under the radar. This one with Takashi Sugiura luckily didn't, and it drew a great rating. And this is just two guys that not only are just great professional wrestlers, they have their history as being a tag team before. The Dangan Yankees, they were one of my favorite tag teams when I started this show in 2015. They were on an incredible run as both, by the way, double champions too. The GHC Tag Team Champions and the NWA Intercontinental Tag Team Champions. They were in 2014.
0-1 tag titles.
Yes. And they went out and had this absolute war of a match in the main event of this Kawasaki show for Pro Wrestling Noah. And I did absolutely make the right choice to sit down and watch this show first from the weekend that I returned from. Man, what a great match. And I think you got a lot of things to say about this one, too.
I don't care if this was 138 minutes. It was still an incredible match. I can watch these two wrestle all day, all night, whole shows worth, weeks worth. I don't care. Listen, make the tournament nothing but these two. Okay, these two just wrestle an infinite series. Every block is just Sugiura and Tanaka on repeat. And I will be fine with it. Forget about that. Like, really, Sugiura versus anybody is just incredible. Like, he's a guy that's so strong. And Tanaka, a great wrestler. Like, there's nothing against him at all. You know, I love him as a veteran hand, hard-hitting guy. Great representative in different companies. We saw it last year at DDT. 0-1, obviously, he's like all they have left, basically, at this point. But he's a great wrestler. Sugiura is, like, legitimately one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, in my opinion. I think his legacy has just built and built and built to where every day I think about him, like, rising on my list of greatest wrestlers of all time.
Yep.
It feels like he just rolls out of bed and has an incredible match.
He does.
So, yeah, this match, it was like, the thing is, it wasn't like, it was like guns blazing, balls to the wall, 38 minutes. They actually did have peaks and valleys in this match. And rose the stakes rose the longer it went. And I thought that was really cool that they were able to build the match until the ending stretch, which of course was phenomenal. But most importantly, you see these two, and it's just a great, great match that you're really not going to see much of in this day and age. I mean, like right now, you see the other companies. It's not better or worse, just different. I mean, to me, this is better. But like other companies, you're not going to have a match like this. That's 38 minutes of this kind of style. You know, this is really bringing back the old wars. You know, even like the peak strong, Big Japan strong division. They're not really doing that right now in Nakanoe. And like he had a very good match versus Nomura, but it was completely different than this. You know, All Japan. You know, Jake Lee is a wonderful performer. We're big fans of him. He's not going to have this kind of match. New Japan Shingo, great performer. Very explosive. You know, maybe even better in some ways, some would say. But he's not going to have 38 minutes of this style. So this is something that they were able to bring in, something very unique for the time period, and something that I just loved watching. And like Sugiura can do it against anybody. Tanaka, I really like him. It was a perfect partner for this match. Just a great match. I loved it. I don't care about the time. I liked that they kept things slow. I liked that they built it. It was good psychology as well. Like, don't say that, like, don't let people fool you and say that it sucked. Like, it was just hard hitting and, like, no thinking, like, meathead bullcrap match. It was some psychology to it. It built very well. The stakes felt like they were rising. The energy felt like it was rising as the match went along. And Sugiura ended up getting the win. Love it. Like, I love this match.
And it's something that we've pointed out numerous times on this show when we compared the Noah heavyweight style to, for example, the New Japan heavyweight style. We can even go to the modern All Japan style that Kento Miyahara's Rise to the Top brought with him. There is much less of a frantic finishing sequence to most of these heavyweight matches in Pro Wrestling Noah, because most of the time there is as you said, the match structure is most of the times built like this. It's the drama rises, but then there is oftentimes a very clear-cut finish where one guy just goes over very clean. And we've had it in a lot of main event Noah matches and even in some like mid-card matches. We've had this, and that's something that I really enjoy these days, that you can just have a finish that's very, very clear and you don't go to like 25 reversals within 30 seconds.
And well, we know I hate that, but I will say, just to add on your point, I completely agree, but I will make fit this part in. A lot of times, too, and I think this match is a great example of it, is a lot of the Go matches had this as well. It feels like by the time the dust settles and there's a winner, it feels like it was like the hero versus the final boss, and it's like that you finally are able to knock that final boss down, and it just comes crumbling down at the end with a big lariat or a big hit or a big finisher. It's like you get that definitive win, like it was a war, and you were finally able to topple this amazing opponent, you know, just in terms of the timing of it and how they were able to build the finish. I thought it was a great showing of that kind of strategy, too, where I felt like Tanaka, he fought as hard as he could. He fought till his last breath, and Sugera had to put him down one more time to win the match.
And that is also why I am a big, big fan of those Congo-produced shows. Because those Congo-produced shows usually are all singles matches, and we've had another one in late July. There was this main event of Kenno versus Masaki Tamiya, where, much like in the Sugiura and Tanaka match, they just went all out, and they, even though they had a confrontation that was on par for a lot of the match, they had a very clear-cut finish with Kenno in the end. They also had a damn strong Nakajima versus Kiyomiya match on that show. And Manabu Soya on those Congo-produced shows, he couldn't make it this time, but Manabu Soya always delivers on those shows too, with also a very clear-cut approach to his matches. And I just enjoy most of the Noah heavyweight scene these days. It's just a breeze to watch all of these matches.
Yeah, that show was really well booked too, because you had the four junior matches. They were all quick. The longest one was 9.5 minutes. All three of the other ones were
very enjoyable too, with this kind of booking. Like, you'd go through these quick matches in the junior scene, and then you'd go through the main event. And then the main events aren't even like 40 minutes long. It's just, I think it was 23 minutes or something like that with Kenno and Kitamiya. So just a great, like, 2.5 hours tops for these shows. Just great.
Yeah, this one was probably even less than that, because like, they really had two matches that were long and three that were under 6 minutes or less. Then one that was 9.5 minutes at the opener. You had the 30-minute match with Nakajima and Kaito. Then the 23.5-minute match with Kenno and Kitamiya. So it was a well done show there. But yeah, very good stuff there. I always enjoy it. I mean, a show with all singles matches, they'd have to try hard for it to be bad. But I think that they actually did a good job. I mean, that's the thing with Noah. Say what you want about the booking, but the reason why I always kind of favor them and enjoy them is because their roster is so talented and so enjoyable up and down that they can make a lot of stuff that maybe I don't enjoy at first glance because of booking. They can make stuff work a lot of the times, and a lot of the guys on the roster have this. Even that show match with the or that show with the Tanaka Sugiura match. It's like they had a completely random match on that show, Kaito and Hajime Ohara, which I really liked.
Stuff in the
mid-card. Yeah, like that was a great match.
Ohara also recently had this mid-card match with Katsuhiko Nakajima that just went under 10 minutes, and it was also very good.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there was a lot of good stuff going on, I think. You know, it was a good show. The junior tag title was... all right, I'm not really huge into the champions right now. Stinger, like, I don't know why. What was wrong with Momo Tag being champions? I don't know why they refuse to give Ohara any titles or any Momo team. But Yoshioka, I think, is a really great talent.
Yes.
Susumu, I don't understand what he brings to the table at all. And
he's a very fine wrestler.
He's an indie wrestler. That's what I see when I see him. Like, him and Hayata and Yohei all are of the same lineage, I feel like. You know, then you had Kongo, Aleha, and Tatsuke.
Well, they actually train in the same school, so.
Well, there you go. No wonder. They're all very similar level. But Aleha, I think he's a great talent that they brought in. You know, former Alejandro
from Wrestle1. He actually broke my heart, Dylan, though, because he was on this great run with Mentai Kid in Kyushu Pro Wrestling, and they had defeated Susumu Yokosuka and Geki Horiguchi for the Kyushu Pro Tag Team title just in July. But now, since Aleha seemingly can't do any more Kyushu Pro dates, which is funny because Susumu still does Freedoms, they have given up on the Kyushu Pro Tag Team title, which is unfortunate because it was a really great story that spent like 6 months in Kyushu Pro. But yes, he is now a member of Congo as well. They brought him in, and actually great look for him. He has completely new gear, does great stuff in the ring, of course, and He has a lot of great bases in the junior division in NOAH too, so I'm looking forward to what he still can bring to the table.
Yeah, he's good. Like I said, hopefully he can have some better opponents in the future. Tadasuke, interesting team. I really like the Tadasuke and Howe team. Howe is like my guy on the NOAH undercards. I love Howe. I think he's a great junior heavyweight. Aleja, he's a good guy to have. I think he brings a unique style to the division too. So I thought it was a really smart signing overall. To bring somebody like him from Wrestle One, great look with the lucha inspired, almost like a Power Rangers look with this red stuff going on right now, and the lucha stylings. Good guy to bring in for the junior division. Lots of wildness going on in the division, but I guess now that they have Hayata as champion, they have Stinger as tag team champions, there is, there's consistency to the division at the moment, which I think it was missing for a long time, but the Stinger holds all the titles, and I'm sure that they will hold them for a long, long time based on their current book.
All right. Let me see. We did not draft Alejandro when we did our fantasy draft.
Ours?
Yeah, we did this NOAH and with the wrestler and fantasy draft with NOAH. You had NOAH and I had All Japan. You had Andy Wu go to Pro Wrestling NOAH.
That's true. Hey, he was a six-man champion with Hub, though.
Yeah.
But we need to do another draft soon. I think is the main thing. I'm feeling in a drafting mood right now. We have the soccer league starting, football starting. We need to get some a fantasy draft of some sort in the future.
Love how I drafted Ashino, Kodama, and Tachibana to All Japan, and that all came to fruition. But I drafted Seki Yoshioka to All Japan too.
Oh,
well.
Who'd I pick for NOAH?
You picked Inaba as your number one pick. You picked Inaba. He's there. Koji Doi, Kumarashi, Kasayashi, Andy Wu, Pegaso Illumina, Jun Tonsho, and Manabu Soya. Ah, two out of eight. Yeah.
Like I said, two and three out of eight. The other ones, I mean, I don't think anybody had any idea a great was starting for Pegaso.
No.
But Andy Wu, he would have been a good pick. But Alejandro, good pickup for NOAH.
Yes. Well, another talking point I have here is Naomichi Marufuji's dark character, Dylan. It is a different kanji writing of his last name.
Yeah, it's not just Marufuji. It's no longer Naomichi.
It's not Marufuji, actually. It is Marufushi, if you spell it correctly. It is like a pun. Because Fushi translates to immortality. So it's Marufushi, basically, but it's still pronounced Marufuji most of the times. And he adopted this gimmick. We had this match with the Great Muda, and he was supposed to face the Great Muda in this match, actually, but Great Muda was out due to COVID protocol as well. And it turned out to be Marufuji and Nosawa Rongai against Hayata and Yoshinari Ogawa. And my takeaway from this gimmick is that this gimmick has absolutely no reason to be on a show when the Great Muda is not there. Because Marufuji just does not have any history of going to a dark character like this. And when the Great Muda is not around, I don't think that Marufuji should be around. But of course, they announced him as such for that show, so I think they just didn't want to backtrack on that. And they just had the match. They hit the match. They did have one funny spot in the match where Marufuji went for the fire extinguisher. And it ended up being a figure four in the middle of the ring with an Ogawa having the figure four on Nosawa. And it was supposed to be out of nowhere, but you saw Ogawa apply the figure four before all the fog went up. It was a fine match, but nothing that I would actually want to see again without the Great Muda in the match.
I wouldn't want to see it with the Great Muda in the match either. So, I didn't care about that at all. I literally have no positive feelings on that match. It was so boring. I watched it. I mean, Hayata, actually, to his credit, I will give him this. I'm not his biggest fan historically, but I think a lot of times in these matches, he will try, at least. I'm not going to question his effort. I thought even in this match, he kind of tried, but there wasn't a lot of redeeming value in this match. And like you said, it's going to be Marufuji and Muta. that would have been a fun team, I guess. To some people. But yeah, then he was out, so they just kept it in, and they put his, unofficial henchman, Nosawa, as his replacement.
Yeah.
And they had this semi-main event match. It definitely got overshadowed, I would say, by the end of it.
They announced another one for Premium Summer Dream 2021 on August 29. Now it's a six-man tag now. Muta, Marufuji, and Nosawa against Ogawa, Kaito Kiyomiya, and Hayata, because Kaito came out to attack Nosawa after the match. Of course, storyline continues of Kaito being bloodied.
Yeah, he'll have a singles match with Nosawa, too.
Mm.
They're clearly setting up for the N1.
Yes.
I mean, whatever.
Whatever. Yeah, whatever, Dylan. N1 victory. We got four blocks.
Now, this is something interesting we can talk about.
Yeah. We got four blocks now. Block B already got a bit derailed. And we have a great replacement, obviously, for Katsunari Murakami, who is out injured. Sadly, because I was really looking forward to him in this block.
Can I just say, love it. Love the blocks. Love the format. Semifinals are back.
Yep.
Noah has brought it back for me, I feel like. And they did it. Like, this is my preferred format. If I ran a company and I was doing a tournament, I would have it exactly like this. Four blocks of, lesser people. I might have gone up to five, but four is very World Cup-esque.
Four is good. Yes.
Yeah, World Cup-esque, I would say. You have the 16 people in here. All different flavors in the blocks. You get the semifinals. You have interesting matchups. You save matchups for future tournaments. Love it. Great format.
It is a great format, and I'm looking forward to this tournament a lot, actually. Let's run this down. Block A. Takashi Sugiura, Kaito Kiyomiya, Manabu Soya, and Keiji Muto. Block B is Kenno, Daiki Inaba, Masaki Mochizuki, and now Kendo Kashin. Block C, Katsuki Nakajima, Kazushi Sakuraba, Kotaro Suzuki, got a great reaction when he was announced, and Masato Tanaka. Block D, Masaki Tamiya, Akitoshi Saito, Masakatsu Funaki, and Katsuyuki Fujita. What a tournament this is, man. A lot of names that... I don't know. Did you expect most of the names to be in this tournament?
For me, I think the only ones that I didn't expect Suzuki to be in, which, you said, got a great reaction. That was probably the...
I didn't really expect Saito or Funaki to be in.
Yeah, Funaki was a random one. Inaba, I thought...
Ems the Lions, baby.
Yeah, of course, Masakatsu Funaki. Inaba, great to see him getting a spot here. I thought he should have had it last year. And now, for the first time in Noah, it's been a while since he's come aboard. But I think he's finally going to get a shot here, and I appreciate that. In a pretty good block, outside of one person in there as well. But yeah, Suzuki, Funaki, Inaba, those were the three that I was probably not expecting. Saito a little bit as well, like you said. I figured you would have Yone and Taniguchi in there, and maybe one of these guys would have been there, but I'd have all three of them in. I think you have some fresh matchups. I'm so happy Funaki
I was in. Me too. He has got a lot to offer still. I was so disappointed that they put in Kendo Kashin and preferred him over Taniguchi, but that shows what they think of Taniguchi these days. He's just the funny King Tani guy and nothing else. Good for him, though, that he has a gimmick now. But still, though, I would have loved to see him in this block.
Yeah, I liked his tournament last year. Disco guy pretty much killed all interest I have in him. So, of the two, Kashin's much more like Murakami than Taniguchi, I guess, if you want to say that. But it was slim picking. I wouldn't have been thrilled no matter what. But I'm definitely not thrilled with the end result. I will say that. I would have rather than put another junior forward, to be honest. But, Kashin. The other three guys in the block are all good. That's the crazy thing. I'm really excited about the block otherwise.
But. And they had Daiki Inaba return to action, and he actually picked up a singles victory in his return with his Manjigatame, which they correctly pointed out that it is the Gokosori Manjigatame, which translates to extremely wrapped octopus hold.
Love it. You can't be more wrapped than extremely wrapped.
Absolutely. You can't. So... when this tournament was first announced, Block B was my favorite because I thought there were a lot of cool matchups with Murakami being in the block, but with him out, I'm leaning more towards block C as my favorite block with Nakajima, Sakuraba, Suzuki, and Tanaka, specifically for Kotaro Suzuki coming in and having a lot of fresh matches with these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I like all the blocks, to be honest. I think A block, I mean, you have Muto, and that's really not for me, but Soya, Kaito, and Sugera.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and even then, they were smart to put Sugera and Muto in the same block, because that's going to be the big test. I just want to see Sugera beat up Muto at the end of the day. And how will they work that match? I think that's interesting. I'm not a big fan of Muto, but I think it's
I'm really interested to see how they will work any match with Muto, because...
Well, we know how they will. They've worked through a bunch of times with Kaito.
I know, but do you expect him to, like, go through in this block?
In A block, who will go through? Yeah, let's break it down block by block here. Like I said, I like the three guys besides Muto. Who do I think will go through? Kaito is the obvious favorite.
The obvious one, and I really think they have to do this. They have to let him go through, but I'm still not confident that he will get his win over Muto.
I think that would be the logical. Do we have, like, the last show?
I have to look it up. But
okay, well, I want to give everyone a nugget to think about while you look it up. So I think we all think of Kaito as the unofficial kind of ace / next ace character, like the young ace of Noah. But if you really look at how they booked things, he was the ace in the last regime. There's mm-hmm. really no evidence since the current regime has took over that they book him and look at him as the ace of the company or even a future guy. Like, I mean, he has not beaten Muto. He's taken a lot of damage. He couldn't even beat Nosawa earlier in the year. And he was kind of the secondary focus behind Inamura in their team. So I think that it's interesting that we all just naturally assume Kaito is the ace because he had the title reign. But that was all with the last regime. That's not the people running it now. How have the people now booked them? And I think there's a stark difference compared to now and back in the days when he was successful.
Looking at the lineup, they are actually setting him up to be in the finals. The first day of block action in block A has Keiji Muto versus Takashi Sugiura. And the final day of block action has Takashi Sugiura versus Manabu Soya and Keiji Muto versus Kaito Kiyomiya.
Yeah, Kaito will win then. Like, he'll move on.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Final day of block B, Kenno versus Mochizuki and Inaba versus Kendo Kashin. So either Kenno or Mochizuki would be fine.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the blocks are so small, you don't even really need to play the day. I just was wondering about Kaito and Muto. Because like I said, if it wasn't the last day, I would say Muto might win. But I think on the last day, they're not going to put Muto over Kaito. So yeah, Kenno and Mochizuki, I think that they could go either way with that.
Yeah.
Mochizuki would be interesting. I'll go ahead and say Kenno will win here. I think that's the safe bet, but I would like Mochizuki to win because it might be a little fresher matchup, perhaps.
Nakajima versus Sakuraba and Tanaka versus Kotaro Suzuki. I'd say Nakajima moves on.
Yeah, that's like the easiest one, I think, to predict.
And then there's block D. Final day of block action is Fujita versus Funaki and Kitamiya versus Saito. And I think, based on how they build him up, it has to be Kitamiya.
Yeah, he's the obvious answer. I like this block a lot. Like, I think Fujita and Funaki is probably like my most anticipated match.
It's going to be a crazy one, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I know like not everybody loves Fujita, but when his head's in the game, like if we saw that against Sugera.
Yeah,
if they give him somebody that, like, he could be a great wrestler. Like,
I mean,
even
everybody knows that I'm not that I don't like him. That's pretty well known. The reason for that is that he will not put anyone over. That's just
he's gonna have to in this tournament. That's not optional.
That is going to be interesting. That if he is really willing to put Masaki Tamiya over, I'm not confident because he didn't even put Super Tiger over when he lost the Legend title in Real Japan Pro Wrestling.
Well, I mean, he'll have to put him over, or if Kitamiya can't win,
that's the
problem. Yeah,
that's the problem here.
So, I mean, but Fujita's not winning the tournament, so no. he has to lose to someone.
Unless he shoots on everybody.
Well, maybe. Listen, I mean, there's no evidence of that happening in Noah, but you know, like I said, I think Funaki could beat Fujita here. But the guy built up his Kitamiya at the end of the day. So yep. I would go for that. Fujita, I think, could win. You know, he just decided, you know, would rather lose to Nakajima or whatever. I could see that as well. But I thought Fujita's matches early in the year, I mentioned Sugiura was my match of the year. I think him versus Kenno was a really good match, too, or earlier in the year, Fujita, that is. So he's got a lot going for him in terms of the in-ring. Whether he puts anybody over, that's a different discussion. Funaki, I love a lot. I think he's a great wrestler, even now. Kitamiya, I like him a lot. He's had a great year. He has a lot of momentum. I think he'll take it here. Like I said, I really enjoyed this block. Saito, he's a big guy who throws bombs. He's old. But in three matches, I think he can bring the best out. And he was very nice on Twitter to a lot of English-speaking fans. He responded to every comment I saw that was on there. So congratulations to Saito for being a cool guy. I think that'll be a really fun block. I think C and D are my favorites overall. No weak links in C. And D, it's like Saito's the one that worries me. And I can live with Saito. So I like C and D. A and B, you have the obvious red flags with Muto and Kashin. But other than that, a good tournament overall. And I like a lot of what they bring to the table. I like that they're all different flavor, too. I like that Block D is different than C Block. You have the Jutsu and Kotaro. You have different styles, so I really appreciate that. But yeah, I'd say Kitamiya, Nakajima, Kaito, and... the thing is, those are all chalk picks, so I think I might change mine to Mochizuki just to have somebody a little different in there. So I'll give Mochizuki to throw a wrench into things.
Maybe Fujita's getting a little soft in his old days. No.
And he could very well win this block. keep that in mind. I just think, and he could, like I said, it could be Fujita versus Nakajima, which is a match I would love to see, to be honest. But I do think it's very possible that Kitamiya and Nakajima could be that could be another page in their rivalry. Mm-hmm. Nakajima versus Kitamiya in the semifinals. I think Kaito is set to win the tournament, though. But what I said a second ago about them not really seeing him as the ace based on their booking gives me a little bit of pause, because I think he's the obvious standout. But if you look at their booking, they haven't really pushed him that way at all, if you really look at what they've done with him. So it's really interesting how that plays out. And to me, Kitamiya and Nakajima was their hottest feud.
But here. Really, because they've been so cautious in recent months, makes me think that he's the one coming out on top in the end.
Yeah, I do too. I think he's the obvious favorite.
Yeah, and what I really like about this tournament too is that they didn't go in the obvious route and have Block A winner face Block B winner and C and D. They just didn't announce it yet. So I'm presuming that they go in a similar direction that DDT always goes to when they have their semifinals, that they will have them just have quote-unquote a shoot draw.
And I think it's still going to end up that way, though. Like, they'd be stupid not to run Kitamiya and Nakajima.
That is true, because they had the 30-minute draw, too. Yeah.
Yeah, Nakajima can get his... It's an obvious story for him to get the win back here over Kitamiya.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, Kitamiya. Yeah, I thought you said Kiyomi.
No, I'm saying Kitamiya and Nakajima in the semifinals. It's an obvious story because you had the stuff with the cage match, the hair. Nakajima can beat him and get his win back. And that sets up a story, too, where you could have a rematch of last year's final with Kaito and Nakajima.
Yeah, and they had this 30-minute match, as I just said. So, yeah, perfectly set up.
Yeah.
Good, good booking.
Yeah, exactly. It's very logical when you think about it on there. I do think that I could have done without, like, Kaito losing to Nosawa on the way to this path. But, it's going to be interesting. Well, Kaito and Marufuji in the future could be a match in there. Like I said, I have a little bit of pause because, like losing to Nosawa, like, that's, like, a huge red flag, in my opinion. But I'm sure they'll correct it with this one.
If it was for a greater cause, I can take this.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it'll all work out in the end and the fans could get behind him. I think that they still could have booked him a little stronger heading into things. But, it could all work out. If he goes undefeated in the tournament, then, all is well that ends well, pretty much. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt here. They set up the obvious win, Muto, in the final day. And they have some good matchups. And, like, whoever wins these blocks, like I said, the two red flags are the two least likely to win their blocks, in my opinion. And Saito as well, if you want to throw him in. I'm okay with Saito, like I said. But everyone else, I think, would have good matches in the semifinals.
Yes. So, this concludes our Noah talk on this show, and then we'll go to more tournaments. As I said on the beginning of the show, we're going rapid-fire tournament corner right now, starting with Tokyo Yoshi Pro Wrestling. And Dylan, we were dumb because we didn't consider Wrestle Princess.
Yeah, that's true.
About,
yeah.
We talked about the winner of the Tokyo Princess Cup. We figured, is Maki Ito winning now? Because their big show usually is on January 4. But we didn't consider that they are going to do Wrestle Princess later this year. So they needed a big main event for this show. And the obvious answer for this show is then Miyu Yamashita versus Maki Ito, who ended up winning the Princess Cup. And I sent out the tweet when I watched the show earlier this week. Absolutely inspiring fashion how Maki Ito won this tournament. Rob laid it out, and I gotta agree with him that the semifinal that Maki Ito had with Mizuki was one of the best matches overall. Not only Joshi, overall I've seen this year. Just incredible, incredible storytelling from these two magnificent wrestlers. I mean, Rob, on his Twitter, you can just go on his Twitter, and he's, he even wrote a piece about it. I think on Happy Wrestling Land, he did.
Yeah, I met your pro res.
Yes, that's it. And, dude, this semifinal was incredible, and Maki Ito went on to have a match that wasn't as great as the semifinal that she had with Mizuki, but another great match with Shoko Nakajima as well. Maki Ito, we go on this show every single time when we talk about Maki Ito, and every single time we go out here and say she's even better than what she was like when we talked about her for the last time. And every time she impresses us more and she improves more. They had this face injury that happened to her for real, and they worked it into her matches on the remainder of the Tokyo Princess Cup. And that just helped these wrestlers so incredible, because sometimes they are just so young in their wrestling careers. Sometimes they struggle to come up with creative ways to work around their matches. But this was a very real thing that happened, and they worked it into their matches so strongly that this Tokyo Princess Cup ended up being a great tournament, even though the first show wasn't liked so well. We talked about that too, but the final shows were incredible.
Yeah, I did think Maki Ito was going to win at the end of it, but that gave me pause. That's like a little red flag I looked at. Would they have her win earlier or have the January 4th match? But she was the obvious winner at the end of the day. Kind of like I'm saying with Kaito, I think he'll win, but that did give me a little bit of pause. Perhaps if that didn't happen, but they went all the way with Maki Ito, and it was the completely correct decision. Rob, he didn't think it was one of them. He thought it was the best match of the year, the semifinal with Mizuki. I actually like the final better overall. And it's a very close race between the two. I like cage match. It's like 8.64 and 8.49, so it's like 0.15 difference. Very close. I like the final more because I feel like it's kind of impossible to separate the two matches. I think they're both equally as valuable. Basically, if she had lost the final, I think that would take away something from the inspiring performance of the semifinal. Maybe some people don't agree. Maybe they would have loved it for what it was. But I think the story is as much of a thing as like her wrestling. And I think the wrestling was so good, too. Like you said, very improved from where she was. I think she's done it. I mean, these two matches was like, to me, for a back-to-back show performance.
Peak Maki Ito.
Not just peak Maki Ito, just peak wrestling. Like, I think this is one of the this is one of the best performances of the year of anybody, in my opinion. Like in a back to back setting, storyline wise, I think the storytelling meant so much to it as well. But I think her wrestling was so good for the reasons you laid out. I won't re-harp on them. But I think from a storyline perspective, I think they needed the final to get over the hump, and like the positivity, the energy from the fans was more than I've seen in wrestling since this clap era started. In Japan. Like, I thought that was like the brightest moment of fan energy that I've seen in any promotion was her winning this tournament. So I really loved both of these matches. I like the other match with Shoko and Miyu too in the final. That's kind of getting overshadowed, but I thought Shoko and Miyu in the final was the semifinal was really good.
Mm-hmm. Best performance of Miyu Watanabe I had seen in a long, long time. I thought she looked so great. And that was kind of my point why I wanted her in the finals, because I'm really a big fan of hers. And I wanted to make, like, I wanted her to advance to the finals so that more people actually see that, what I see in her.
And the sad thing is she got overshadowed again by this Maki Ito thing.
Yeah, but I think it's a slow way for her to the top. Like, she can come back next year and say, I made it to the semifinals this time, but this time, I make it to the finals.
Yeah, she wrestles good. I'm a fan of hers, too. So I just want to shout out that match, because I think everyone's talking about the Maki matches, and with good reason. But I really like that match, and I think Maki deserves a lot of credit. I think the company deserves a lot of credit, because they put her against two perfect opponents, Mizuki and Shoko, the two people I would have put in to put somebody new over. Shoko especially, I think. Her greatest attribute is making others look good, because she's at such a high level herself that she can elevate people that way. And it totally worked here. Ito totally delivered in her way as well. The fans came through. Storyline was great. They have great action and a great long-term storytelling with her and Yamashita. I think that they should go all the way. Like, she is their hottest star. I think it's time for her to be coordinated as the true number one star of Tokyo Joshi Pro. I think it's well-deserved, something people are clamoring for. The fans want it, and she deserves it. She wrestled so good that I absolutely love this match. That final is up there in my match of the year as well. You know, like, you could say the wrestling was better. I mean, like, two match of the year candidates to me, that Sugera and Tanaka and
back shows on Tokyo Yoshi Pro, something that 2 years or 3 years ago nobody would ever considered.
Yeah, and like I was saying, my point was that you could, you know, the Sugera and Tanaka match was right up there too, and it's like match of the year with that. Mm-hmm. Then you had this run with Maki Ito. You know, they're both up there, and you could say the wrestling was better, but I will say that the storyline and the storytelling here was up there with anything I've seen in wrestling this year. And I was telling Rob, me and Rob had a long conversation about this whole tournament on the Patreon. We did a show talking about everything, kind of like what we're about to do here. We've covered every show of Stardom, by the way, the 5-star Grand Prix on there, lots of fun stuff on the Patreon. But we had a long conversation about these matches because he loved that semifinal so much. And he, you know, he's not really a regular Tokyo Joshi Pro viewer, but he really caught on with these finals and loved the performances. And I completely agree. Just such a great run for Ito. And I love what they did here. So
hey, listen,
great matches.
We weren't regular TJPW watchers either. But it's
I was, but
you were,
yeah. I've always watched the Tokyo Joshi Pro like the last what 3, 4, 5 years.
Oh yeah, you weren't always a fan of.
Yeah, I watched them.
But they've drawn me into that I've become a regular watcher of their shows much more than any other Yoshi company, to be quite honest. And it's just the storylines, as you said, they are captivating. They draw you in. And now, with these wrestlers on top, we not only get great storylines, we get great wrestling. So TJP really is a great product for anyone to check out.
I think they benefit from being on the same streaming service as DDT and NOAH. You get obvious, you know, the other companies are kind of on their own. Like, I don't watch Tokyo Joshi Pro even now. Like, the wrestling is just not at the same level as Stardom up and down the card. It's a good product. And the storylines, if you're into it, you can definitely get engrossed with the character work. Mm-hmm. But I don't watch Tokyo Joshi Pro for the same thing as I watch NOAH. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything like that. But that's a good thing. I made this point on my Twitter the other day. It's like, you know, I don't watch Gato Move for New Japan, but they both add value to my wrestling experience. Mm-hmm. You know, like the same thing here.
My point was not to compare like Stardom to TJP, just to make the point that they've risen so much in the last couple of years.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, the experience being on Wrestle Universe is so helpful to them, because if you're a fan of these other companies, that's an easy gateway to jump into Joshi Wrestling, because it's right there with you anyway. So I think a lot of fans, like, I think their growth in general, it's not just you, but a lot of fans, I think, are feeling that way about them.
Yes, absolutely.
And you have stuff like they can wrestle. They have girls in, you know, like AEW too. That's you can't discount that completely. Mm-hmm. You know, Maki Ito's made appearances on AEW, and getting the name out there, getting the company out there, I think that can only help everything.
I was really thinking, if Mio Yamashita loses the championship to Maki Ito, I would absolutely love a Yamashita run in AEW.
their women's division sucks, so like I really have no interest.
They're trying their building right now.
They're not trying though at all. Like I said, they have like one match a show. If that.
I know, but they are building.
I'm not a fan. Like keep me in Tokyo Joshi Pro. Like I would much rather her face these other.
Like
girls.
Have you just come over and do like a couple of matches. That's fine.
Yeah, like I mean, we were talking about this again. Me and Rob, we're gonna do this AEW. We mentioned the draft earlier. We're gonna do this AEW fantasy draft on the Patreon. Try to split up the rosters, and we're kind of brainstorming on Sakazaki because she's technically contracted to AEW. Obviously, TJPW is her home promotion.
Yeah,
but it's like you're gonna bring her over just to wrestle on Dark.
Yeah, that's weird. That is really weird. I actually thought that she had returned to Japan because they used her like once or twice on Dark, and then they didn't use her for 2 or 3 weeks. So I figured, she may be back in Japan, but she wasn't.
It's just the women's division. They just don't book it very good.
That's true. They don't book it very well. But they've added more wrestlers to the division, and I think they are still going to add more. So
can't you just say the division sucks? They haven't added.
I will not. It's not good right now, but they are adding more talent, and we'll see about that. They added Jamie Hayter.
Okay, that is true. They did add her. And basically, like when her debut, she looked just like Becky Lynch. So that like kind of
that was so crazy.
Yeah, I was like, "Whoa, wait a minute!" Like, what that happened? But yeah, Jamie's a great talent. You're right on that. Jamie's a great person to bring in on their part. I hope they just use him more. That's my main problem. They have talent. Like Sheeta hasn't been on Dynamite in a million months.
Her character is just on Hikaru Shida.
She has so much more to her.
Was fine for her run as champion, but what else is there?
Tune into our Patreon show because I have a lot more to say about this when we do it. Because you're totally right. But why did it have to be that way? She has so much to her that's like super cool and awesome about her personality, and they never spotlighted it at all. It was crazy to me. Her English isn't even that bad anyway. Like she had that promo that she's perfectly fine on in English. Yes, that's the problem. Yes. Like man, what AEW y'all got to get that women's division together because you have some talent. Was it Sheeta, Jamie, Britt Baker, super talented? You have access to Sakazaki. Emi Sakura is over there now. You've got people. Book them better.
You do. Well, on the topic of Yoshi, Dylan, Stardom, they had to cancel some of their shows. They've canceled actually this weekend's set of shows too due to COVID as well. What is the update that you can give us here?
Yeah, they just canceled another show this morning, the September 5th show. Previously, they announced that they had a makeup show scheduled at Corken Hall for the 16th. So I guess it'll be a big makeup show at this point. they're going to have making up lots of matches. But the state of emergency is bad, man. In Japan, we were talking about it earlier with New Japan. The whole country's in a tough spot at the moment. So, yeah, that's what we know so far. They've canceled shows up to the 5th. Hopefully things can calm down and they can do some more. Have some more shows, rather.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it. The last show that they had was on August 13, right?
Yes.
Well, not a good situation at all. That is a real rapid fire tournament situation right now. But yeah, hopefully they will. The tournament last year was a complete mess. And it's not looking any better now.
No, it's such a shame because the tournament is so good, like wrestling wise. If you like, me and Rob have both talked about this. He doesn't, he's not that familiar with Stardom at all. He's again just much like Tokyo Joshi Pro. He's not that familiar with Stardom, but he's loved all the matches so far. Not all of them, but most of them. He's really been into. He's been higher on them than me for pretty much a lot of them. he's been really into the tournament, and I've been into the tournament, and I've liked the matches a lot for the most part. But like every show is so fun to watch. It's so good. You see the characters getting over. They're setting seeds for the future storylines. It's such a well booked company. I think it's been awesome. Like these first six shows, I've loved the tournament so far.
Sounds great. I've actually not been able to check that out. There's so much else I had on a list that I wasn't able to check out Stardom yet. But, well, maybe this pause gives me the opportunity to catch up with Stardom. We'll see about that.
Yeah, here's some big matches to people to check out if you haven't yet. You know, like you said, there's some pause, some time for you to check them out. Day one, I thought, had three matches I'd recommend. Shuri versus Saya Kamatani, Momo Watanabe and Mayu Iwatani, and Micah versus Yutami Hayashishida. Oh, I've really enjoyed Micah throughout the tournament as well. It's been one of my favorite. All of them I've liked. But those are three strong matches from night one. Night two, you have Natsupoi and Momo Watanabe, Shuri and Micah, Mayu and Julia. Main event, that was really good. Shuri and Micah was like one of my favorite matches of the tournament. Day three, you had Shuri and Azumi. That was actually my number one favorite match of the tournament too. Shuri's another one. Azumi, I love. Great wrestlers there. Saya Kamatani and Tom from night four, I love that too. Really good match. Night five was just two match show. Neither one of them were worth watching. Then the sixth night, all of the matches I thought were good. You know, the opener was Starlight Kid and Death. Fuki and Death, and that was okay. It was like a 4-minute match, but then everything else I would recommend. Saya and Konami, great match. Konami really did a great job leading that match. Tom Nakano and Micah, also a great match. Very brief too. Micah's matches are often shorter and faster paced, so I really enjoy that. Mayu and Natsupoi, good match. Mayu had like a Tanahashi-esque performance leading Natsupoi. And then Julia and Koguma, one of my top three favorite matches in the tournament as well. So lots of great matches on that show, the first six shows.
Sounds great, yes. Final talking point on this show, another tournament with the All Japan Udo tournament that is going on right now. They had a big first day. They had two shows on August 15 in Shinjuku Phase, where they did the 16 first round matches. And they have since had another day of action where they did the second round matches. And from these matches, Dylan, which was your favorite one?
The All Japan tournament was interesting. In a lot of ways, I thought the first show, we did a show on this too, and I was like, the first show, the day show of the first round, was like a completely different show to the second round. I don't know who booked the second round.
Actually was.
Yeah, we were speculating that maybe Shuji booked the day show and Tajiri booked the second one, because there was so much nonsense. Hey, I don't like to do this. It's something that's very rare for me. Because as we all know, there's one thing I love is the listeners. I've always shouted out the listeners and respected, especially the Patreon subscribers, the Eastern Area family. But Gerard DiTrolio, he's a writer for Voices of Wrestling, reviews the All Japan shows. He had a grave sin when he praised the Yoshitatsu versus Hikaru Sato match. I thought that was a big mistake on his part. He gave it 3 stars. I mean, he didn't go crazy with it. But I was very unhappy about that.
You know, what I laughed about the match was post-match when Hikaru Sato gave him the Ensugiri.
Maybe it was a shoot.
Maybe.
Maybe it was a shoot. That's what I want to say. It's a shame that somebody needs to put that on a cage match. Like, they're missing the Hikaru Sato and Yoshitatsu match on the night show. It's on the day
it
show.
It is.
Oh, wait, no, the night show is the other show. Okay. My German is very sloppy, people. I'm sorry. I did not know what a bend and Nachmittag means. So, I apologize to the cage match people out there. But yeah, Gerard, though.
Put it in there. So, yeah.
Okay.
Fault.
Gerard. No, it's nobody's fault. It's my fault for not knowing German. I completely take the blame. You were 100% correct. But Gerard, he has to answer for putting over the Yoshitatsu match. I was not happy, and we had a discussion on our Patreon, or he responded to the show, and he was very sly about it. So I was very disappointed. Usually a great reviewer. He gave his reasons. I'm not going to criticize him. I advise everybody to read his reviews, see his reasons, and everything else was on point, pretty much. Yeah. Just not that one match I could not understand. But the best match of the tournament was the main event of that show.
I was just going to say, at least that show had Shotaro Ashino versus Yuma Aoyagi in a match where they really went all out. I absolutely love the arm work that they did in this match. Shotaro Ashino had to work his way back into the match, and in the end did. I absolutely loved the finish with him going for the T-bone suplex. That's a great move that he has. So yeah, the rating, we only have 3 ratings, but I would put it up at between 7 and 8, definitely.
I might even be a little higher. I thought that was the best All Japan match of the whole year.
Oh,
to be
wow.
honest. I had 4.25. Me and Gerard, we agreed. So look at how fast.
I might as well go 8. Yeah, 7 is a little low. You're right.
I said 8.25. 8.25. 4.25 stars on there. New cage match system.
But now has breaking down the Meltzer system.
Yes. Yes. People thought he was crazy when he went 7 stars. I went 8 stars on there. But no, it was a great match. I really loved it. But yeah, the finish, that was one of my moves. That was like my setup move to the Crisis Core because that was Shelton Benjamin's T-bone suplex. It wasn't just any T-bone. He transitioned the T-bone into a power slam. So I popped huge for that. That was like my markout moment there when he used the T-bone. I loved that. But the whole match was so good. I thought Ashino and Aoyagi, I said it on the show, I think in terms of All Japan workers, I really love Sato. I think he's up there, but maybe not in the Yoshitatsu match, but he did good in there. It wasn't his fault, but he's probably my favorite worker in All Japan. But besides that, I think Ashino and Aoyagi are the top two heavyweights in terms of just pure in-ring. They're the guys I trust the most of the heavyweights, and I thought totally delivered in their match.
Yes, they absolutely did. Another match that I really liked was the second round match between Kento Miyahara and T-Hawk. Lots of great teases in the match. I really loved when they went for the finish and Kento went for the package German. And for a brief moment, it looked like that T-Hawk would counter the package German setup to deliver his BT bomb. And then Kento just brought it down again and hit the package German to defeat T-Hawk. Really liked that finish. And on that show, we also had Jake Lee and Koji Omoto. It was all right. Probably should have put Kento and T-Hawk in the main event, but I see what they are telling there, the story between the former Jin members. That is all right.
Then he's the champion.
Yeah, he's the champ too. What do you think about the Kento and T-Hawk match?
Oh, Kento and T-Hawk, good match. I really enjoyed what we saw between them. I thought they had good chemistry. I think T-Hawk's a great wrestler, honestly. Yeah. He's a guy that I really, really
enjoy. So fired up all the time.
Yeah, I love him, honestly, all the time. Pretty much just like he's fired up. I think he's awesome all the time. I really love his matches. He's a guy that I think you could put in with pretty much anybody, and he'll bring the best out of. I thought he did a good job here with Kento. Kento style, sometimes it wears on me, but I think other times when it's time for a big match or an important one, I think he delivers much more often than not. So I thought he delivered here. It was a good match. I don't think it was as good as Ashino and Aoyagi, but it was of the second round matches, that was probably the one I would point to as well as the standout. And it was one I was interested in going in because I thought T-Hawk was kind of a dark horse for me in this tournament where I was thinking, man, if they believe in him enough to beat Kento, he could win the tournament. But obviously they slotted him here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, that was the realistic reaction you just gave there. So yes, you're completely correct. They do not, but they had a good match anyway. So also very interested to see what they do. Are there not really what they do, but what they've done already with Aoyagi.
Yes.
Aoyagi, that is going into the third round. That was a little bit of an upset and I love it. I think it's great. They gave him a couple of easy. Beating a heavyweight's always a big deal for a junior, but Omori is not highly ranked, so I think it's great that they gave him that.
Yeah.
And beating Tajiri, wonderful news in my book.
Yeah, he won both matches basically with a full Nelson hold, sunset flip attempt to the full Nelson. And now they are doing a show on Tuesday, August 24. They have the third round matches, basically quarterfinals of the tournament. Atsuki Aoyagi versus Shotaro Ashino. That should be a great, great match.
Yeah, that's why I love that they put Atsuki forward. I'm a big fan of Atsuki and Ashino. That's a guy, one of the top workers. Can't wait for it.
Heavyweight clash, Suwama and Shigehiro Irie. By the way, there was an underrated match from the first day, the noon show. Irie and
Kumarashi.
Really liked the match.
Yeah, best Arashi match in All Japan. I thought great matchup stylistically. Two big guys, very similar in style, very similar in look even. They feel like they could be like brothers or something, I feel like. But great work, though. A really good match.
They're continuing the Jin storyline with Jake Lee versus Ayato Yoshida. That should be really interesting, too, how they approach this one. should tell a lot on how they see Ayato Yoshida in All Japan now.
I'd be pretty surprised if he won, but you know,
I don't expect him to win, but I'm more curious to see how he looks against Jake Lee.
Oh, he'll look great. He's a I love him. sure. And like they're not going to have Jake like wrestle some bullcrap match. It's going to be they're going to give him time. And Yoshida, I totally think will deliver.
And then there's Kento Miyahara versus Shuji Ishikawa. Didn't Shuji beat him in the G1 in the German Carnival?
That could be a future G1 match if New Japan gets desperate enough. That's something I did see that like, oh, Kento could come in for G1, but maybe not. Like I said, but yeah, Kento and Ishikawa. I think that Ishikawa did beat him because remember Ishikawa put himself over all the important guys like yeah. Kento and Jake
oh,
Lee.
No, Kento actually beat him. No, that was
Ishikawa.
Oh, it was last year. Yeah,
Ishikawa definitely beat him. Yeah. I promise.
Yeah.
But Kento will get his win back.
Yes. So that then leads us to the semifinals, Curtain Hall, August 29. Would be, in our assumption, would it be Jake Lee versus Shotaro Ashino? And on the other side of the bracket,
Kento and Suwama.
Kento and Suwama. Right. So, my final right now is Suwama versus Shotaro Ashino because Suwama... We said it, he would be winning the tournament. We said it before. And I can't see Ashino losing to Jake Lee again.
Yeah. Logical. I mean, and they kind of had like a tag team storyline, so that would kind of add a little bit extra.
Yeah, so Suwama beats him in the final. That would be fine.
Yeah, totally.
And like, people always say that Ashino doesn't win any big matches, but beating the champ would be big. So he could go to the finals and lose to Suwama and still look good in the end. And they would still continue their tag team. Would be a good story for both.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I think that would be perfect booking, to be honest. You know, you set up the next match with Suwama and you give Ashino like that. He needs a win to take any kind of step forward.
Mm.
So for him to beat Jake would be great booking for him at just the title and just the company itself to have somebody you can kind of, because he's kind of like hanging by a thread at this point. I kind of thought Zeus was going to win over him, to be honest with you, but he's already made it. He's exceeded my expectations already, but I do think that it would make more sense for him to beat Jake to give him that win. And you could also set up a future title shot for Ashino that he could lose in the future as well, which
sure.
they're big fans of in All Japan.
They love it. It's their kink.
Yeah. Yes. They tagged that one for sure. They need to switch, I think, to have a different kink at some point.
Have those matches on OnlyFans.
That's not allowed anymore.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. They're taking all that away.
Oh, man. All right, Dylan. Yeah, that is it, right? That's the topics that we had for this show.
Yeah, I do want to say one thing before we get out of here. You know, it's something I've been sitting on for a little while, and I definitely wanted to say it. I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out here. Like last week, my friend, Real Hero, Jamal Hepburn.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he passed away, and he was very young, in his early 30s. He's a true friend of mine, somebody I haven't talked to, I've talked to a lot over the years, and I took his death pretty hard, but more importantly than just me, it's all the thing I did take solace is the outpouring of support for Real Hero, and so many people, wrestlers, fans, everything, they all said so many great things about him. I mean, this is a guy I talk to not just about wrestling. We talk about all kinds of stuff over the years. And it was really tough because, you know, this year was going to be crazy in NFL. I know you're probably not a big fan of football, but our teams, he was a big Jets fan. I'd always rip on him for being a Jets fan and a Knicks fan. The two of the worst teams in the NBA and NFL. But the Knicks did turn it around. And the Jets and my team, the Panthers, made a trade for their former starting quarterback. So we would talk a little bit about football and basketball in the future or in the past. And we'd also talk about wrestling, obviously. But he meant a lot to me as a friend. But to the people out there, he added so much to Japanese wrestling in the West. I honestly don't even think we'd be able to even do this show if he wasn't around back in old days. And then, like I said, this isn't somebody that I, you know, we just popped up with one day. like he's been around. I've known him for a long time, or at least known of him and talked to him for a while. But he was supporting me when I was at Pro Wrest Spirit 8 years ago, you know, and stuff like that. And he was so important to the Japanese scene and the growth of it back in that era. And everybody owes a debt of gratitude to him. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling, you owe a debt of gratitude to Real Hero. I know everybody knows the name. Maybe you knew him as a person. He's a really cool guy to talk to. Maybe you didn't know him as a person. Maybe you just knew him from the wrestling uploads, because he was still doing that until the very end, helping people along, find new things. He was so easy to approach and talk to. Just a really cool guy and a great guy. And he's going to be so missed, you know. And like I said, I took his death pretty hard, to be honest, at first. But it's been about a week or so.
Yeah.
And, I can talk about it a little better now.
I woke up this morning and I just scrolled through Twitter and I just saw his name on there, and that is usually not a good sign. But it was a huge punch to the gut. And as you said, he was a huge part of Japanese pro wrestling fandom for a lot of people. I think a lot of people have only come across a lot of things in Japanese wrestling because of him. I still have his Daily Motion page bookmarked to the day, by the way.
Yeah, see, that's where it all started in the old days. Go way back was on Daily Motion.
Yeah, there was him. There was Puro Wookie on Daily Motion. And it was a huge punch to the gut, because last year we had this group of fans, and WXW fans, and we transitioned from the Facebook Messenger to a Discord last year. And usually when you transition from one messenger to another, there is something that is left behind. And unfortunately for me, that was a lot of conversations with Jamal. He also was on Discord. We talked a bunch of times there too, but it wasn't as often anymore as it was on the Facebook Messenger. For the past 10 years, I've said it on Twitter too. There were times we talked daily. There were times a couple of weeks we didn't talk, but usually we would talk a lot too, not only about wrestling, not only just about regular stuff, just about regular life and stuff, like you said. And the outpour of love that this guy received, it was absolutely unique. I've never seen this ever on Twitter, that everybody had this same mutual feeling for this one person. And it goes to show what a great person he just was. And it is, I still even, it's just 1 week after. Is it 1 week? I don't know.
Yeah, it was a couple of
days.
Yeah.
I still can't process it, actually. I still cannot process that he's just...
Yeah,
just
1 week to the day, actually.
One week to the day.
Last Friday.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's something I really thought about a lot the last few days. You were talking about how... Because that's the thing, you know, same way with me. Like, you know, there were times when we were talking a lot. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes, you know, stuff would happen. We'd get busy. He'd be doing a lot of stuff. I'd be doing a lot of stuff. And that's what I really kind of was a gut punch to me, was like... Just when I told that story about our team's trading quarterbacks, it's like, I know I would have messaged him like really soon. And it hurt me that I wasn't able to, you know,
that is one big regret that I have too, that we didn't really message a lot in
recent. Well, yeah, like I said, just the last little while, you know, like for sure. Cause and I said for a long time we weren't, he was a huge supporter of mine, like real talk from basically the start. To be honest, you know, because he would always message me with stuff, you know, and he was a big fan of me, my pro spirit writing, like I said, all the way back then. But especially when we started doing the show, it got a little bit of a bigger platform, so to speak.
Yes.
You know, people, he was so so supportive of me, and he really liked a lot of my takes too. And we had a lot of similar experiences, you know. Back in those days, I might say something about New Japan, everybody would get mad, and then he'd be like, "Man, you're totally right about that," you know, something like, "I can't deal with these guys either."
Yeah, he would often come to me on the Facebook Messenger too, and just send me my own tweet and said, "Yes, that is it." It was amazing.
Yeah, but like I said, he was a great person overall. Like I said, he was a huge supporter of mine, and I was definitely a huge supporter of his. Our mutual friend, Isaac, who co-hosted a show with Real Hero, Puro in the Rough, he has his own website. He posted an absolutely wonderful, wonderful testimonial to Jamal as a person, a friend, and an influence in wrestling. And, you know, I was talking to somebody else, because like I said, I was really unhappy when that happened. I was really hurt and felt that sense of loss on a personal level. And that's not something I've dealt with it a few very key moments in my life. Mm. And this feels like it was definitely deserving of that, because it felt like a personal loss, you know, regardless of whether we talked the last 2 weeks or not. Like that felt like a personal loss. And somebody said something to me about what you were saying about the outpouring of love and support, that as sad as it is that he's gone way, way too young. Mm. The fact that you have a man out here, or any kind of person, and all they do is talk about how great he was and the amount of people, that's somebody who lived their life to the fullest.
Absolutely.
And I completely agree with that. And there's so many great stories that have come out that I didn't even know about. Like he was doing, like he was coaching this school team. He graduated college. He was my good friend.
So incredibly proud of that. When you follow him on Facebook, he was... When he received his college degree, he was smiling from ear to ear on his photos that he posted. His family was incredibly proud of him, and the two people that I immediately went to when I read about it was Isaac and Eric, of course, formerly of the Real Hero Archive.
Yeah,
because he was one of the closest friends that he had, and he's still in full disbelief of what happened. I don't know yet, but when he messaged me back, and I still have to message him back. I remember now. Those were the two that I immediately thought of because they were so close to him.
Yeah, like I said, it was a really terrible time when it happened, but I definitely want to shout him out right now because he deserves all kinds of love as a person, but and also just like I don't know if any one person meant as much to Japanese wrestling in the West than he did.
There was one tweet I saw just 1 or 2 days after that, and there was one guy saying that maybe it's not piracy, but it's just keeping things online that would just be gone otherwise. You know, because he didn't care. He just put it up anyways. He started on Daily Motion. He went to VHO. He went to Root.
Yeah.
He went back to YouTube and had his channel on private for the last couple of months there. He just went on and on and on and just didn't care.
I know. Like I said, he just did it for the love of the game, man. He helped so many people on there and worked so hard to do it. I don't care about piracy, whatever you want to call it. To me, he meant so much to me and so much to this world of wrestling that if any Japanese companies are upset about it, then they don't get it, because they gave so much more from all these people that would have never been able to watch, especially back in the old days. Nowadays, and that's the thing, like the old days is what led to these days, pretty much, because there wouldn't have been any fan interest if there wasn't anything like that. There wouldn't have been people that have been watching everything here and there. And, you know, you can see even nowadays, things have become so fragmented among a lot of the fans where they will get a streaming service and kind of camp out in their favorite promotion. There's nothing wrong with that. But back in the old days, you could watch everything. And it was really because of him that interest even was sparked in the first place. And I think, like I said, there was no company, no wrestler, no nobody that meant as much to Japanese wrestling in the West than he did. And that means so much to me on a personal level. And the fact that he was a friend of mine, and I'm proud to call him one, the fact that he supported this show that we're doing through all these years, and I know he would have continued throughout. He would always message me all kinds of stuff. And the fact that he meant so much to me and meant so much to the world, I cannot stress how proud I am of that brother. And I hope that I continue to make him proud the farther we go along the show, because I know I did, and I know he told me he did, and I know I told him he did, and he deserved every bit of love that he got when he passed away.
I mean, he listened to this show, we listened to theirs. That's why I was so happy that we got Isaac on this show as representative of the Poor and the Rough, that we had Larry in the Rough. I loved it. And man, here's to Jamal, and I concluded my tweet, and I think that is as much as we can say about this, because he was a hero, and real heroes, they never die, right?
They won't be forgotten. That's for damn sure, as long as I'm around.
This has been it for the Eastern Lariat for now. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.